claim there. George, please come back and let me know about this. What, you know, what they say, the solicitors, when he speaks to them in those terms. I'll be really interested to know what happens next. But I'll be surprised if there's no claim here. Surely there is going to be a claim. I think there will be. Thank you very much for your calls, texts and tweets this evening. That's it from me, consumer lawyer Dean Dunham. A quick reminder that the advice offered in this hour is for guidance only. You should always seek your own independent legal opinion. I'll be back next Sunday, 9 p.m. with another LBC Consumer Hour. In the meantime, if you've missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinion, put your news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio, and of course listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up on LBC at 1, it's Richard Spur, but next it's Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. A packed programme tonight. We'll get some information about the big storm barrelling towards us and get an idea of what the rest of the summer will be like. We'll hear about the massive rats that are invading people's homes among an explosion in their numbers. We'll talk about Jeremy Corbyn's new political party and what effect it might have on the existing ones. We'll look at how the results of a poll show that people are or are not happy to swim in our seas in Britain. We'll check in with our US correspondent for the latest from there. But first, the government is to ban advertising the services of people smugglers in an attempt to stop the boats. But will it work? That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the former chief immigration officer for the UK has told LBC a planned new crackdown on smuggling gangs will have no impact. Ministers are looking to create a new offence which would also outlaw the promise of illegal working being promoted online. Those convicted could face up to 5 years in prison, but the human trafficking and smuggling expert, Dr. David L. Suber, has been telling LBC new tactics may be needed.
I think that the government could do much better at kind of trying to shift the narrative on migration, bringing it in a lot more into broader conversations such as, you know, the UK's needs for jobs in sectors like healthcare, engineering, education, and also unskilled labour, rather than chasing the right criminalising immigration.
Hamas has announced it's preparing to work with the Red Cross to deliver aid to the hostages it's holding in Gaza. But it says that would depend on Israel allowing humanitarian corridors to be opened on a permanent basis and the halting of airstrikes during the distribution of supplies. The Israeli Prime Minister says he's been talking with the local delegation of the International Red Cross. An investigation has begun in Greater Manchester following the death of a man who was found unresponsive in police custody. The policing watchdog says 26-year-old Ellis Rocks was detained at the Britannia Hotel near Wigan on Thursday evening. He died in hospital this morning. Thousands of motorists who bought cars on finance before 2021 could receive potential payouts, with the Financial Conduct Authority saying it's now looking into a compensation scheme. It's unclear how many people could be eligible, with the authority estimating most will probably receive less than £950. A consultation will begin by early October. The personal finance expert, Martin Lewis, says it will work out the mechanics of the process.
We expect payouts to come in 2026. Assuming this will happen, and it's very likely to happen. As for exactly how it will work, it hasn't decided yet. Firms will have to contact people, although there is an issue about them having destroyed some of the data for older claims. They'll have to contact people to tell them that they likely have a claim. Then either they'll pay them automatically or people will have to opt in and apply.
And two men have been charged in connection with disorder outside a hotel housing migrants in Essex. They're due before magistrates in Chelmsford tomorrow. 11 people have now been charged over events at the Bell Hotel in Epping. LBC weather, mostly dry overnight with increasing cloud cover and windy conditions developing. We'll see a low of around 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. in an effort to, in that well-used phrase, stop the boats, ministers are to outlaw social media adverts promoting journeys on small boats across the channel to asylum seekers. The government is going to create a UK-wide criminal offence that could lead to perpetrators being sentenced for up to 5 years in prison and a hefty fine. Let's talk about this with Rob Bates. Rob is director at the Centre for Migration Control. Good evening, Rob. Good evening, Rob. Nope. Didn't think so. Never mind. I'll give you the story and we'll try and get Rob on the phone. So you've got the outline of it. Ministers are to outlaw social media adverts promoting journeys on small boats across the channel to asylum seekers. Facilitating illegal immigration is already a crime, though. This change will make it a specific offence to create material for online publication that promotes or offers services that would lead to a breach of UK immigration law. It's sounds very much like one of those notions that is to make even more illegal something that already is. Have we got him?
Absolutely right. Sorry. Yeah,
there you are, Rob.
Yes, you know, I'm with you. Yes, you're absolutely right.
That's thanks very much for joining us. Do you think, I mean, from the name of your organisation, the Centre for Migration Control, I would imagine that you would be keen for this to work. Do you think it will?
I wish it would be effective. I wish it would be the silver bullet that the Labour government have clearly been looking for the last year since they entered power, since they assumed power. But I unfortunately think, as you said, this is effectively a duplication of something that is already a criminal offence. And, you know, it doesn't actually have that extraterritorial power. It doesn't allow, for instance, Devon Constabulary to go and arrest individuals in Bulgaria or Albania or other individuals that are actually facilitating these adverts and facilitating this trade. I think Kevin Saunders, the former chief immigration officer of the UK, I think he was there for about 15 years, put it best when he said that if the Labour Party really want to sort of tackle this issue, the best route they can go down is not focusing so much on smashing the gangs, as Keir Starmer is very clearly made his sort of staked his reputation on achieving, but it actually looking to remove some of those pull factors that are making the crossings and making the opportunity of getting into Britain so enticing for individuals that are coming across the channel.
So it sounds like you think this is doing something to appear to be doing something.
I think so, and it seems to have worked to some extent. It's obviously grabbed a few headlines, but I think it's another instance of the Labour Party coming up with a gimmick that gets reported and makes it seem like they are taking action. We've seen previous notions put forward by them earlier this year that had a very similar effect, where they were looking to clamp down on taking down social media posts. So this is clearly the Labour Party realising that their grand strategy, the framework, the reorientation that happened under them when they took control, focusing less on the flows of individuals coming across the channel and more on those facilitating it, has really run out of road at this point. I think we've seen, you know, some efforts to clamp down on boats and motors and life jackets and things like that on the continent, but they really are restricted in not just their legal ability to do that with cooperation with European partners, but also the logistical and the actual manpower required to do this. And I think what we've seen with the record numbers that are coming across now is that actually the real reason why individuals are still coming to Britain in such large numbers is because they still think it is worthwhile. They don't see there as being a real deterrent in place. And so long as that remains the case, individuals such in smuggling gangs will continue to crop up and make a pretty penny out of it.
Yes, but there is no silver bullet, as you said. It's a wall of many bricks. So there could, maybe that's not quite the right analogy, a wall, but I'll go with it. There's a wall. It's a wall of many bricks. And so each proposition, each action on the government's part might have a small effect that, taken together, might actually eventually solve the problem.
Well, a small effect, yes, absolutely. But when you look at what the Labour Party did when they took power, scrapping key parts of the Illegal Migration Act, obviously undoing the Rwanda plan and the necessary deterrent effect that I think that could have very well had. And we were starting to see instances of that actually having some small deterrent effect. And then, of course, those processing agreements as well and those agreements with third countries such as Albania as well. I think the Labour Party really have come in, and the Tories were, you know, failing woefully actually in reducing the numbers. But what Labour have done is come in and take away some of the key bricks, as you like, of that wall, and to effectively try and build it from scratch, pebble by pebble. And what we're seeing is record numbers. We're obviously seeing real public discontent with this. And the question that people around the cabinet need to be asking themselves is it time for us to reorientate our approach and to recognise that actually we did get this wrong? We perhaps didn't understand how migration and migration flows work.
So I'm a little confused. Are you suggesting that what the Labour Party should be doing is going back to what the Tories were doing, which you just described as a woeful failure?
No, I was saying the Tories were woefully failing because they didn't take that final step that was needed. The Rwanda plan, in its essence, the kind of the philosophical underpinning, this idea that you need to have a country, a third country to which you can remove those individuals where you can't identify their country of origin, and then also look to have stronger agreements with those countries of origin as well, was right in essence. Unfortunately, the Conservative Party didn't take those next steps needed, such as disentangling some of the human rights framework that has now been, some would argue, exploited, some would be overzealously interpreted by immigration tribunals, and was not prepared to countenance doing so. And the result was that actually, although there were some effects when you look at sort of individuals going over into Ireland rather than coming into the UK, what actually happened in the large part was that people kind of saw it as a hollow promise. But the philosophical underpinnings of the Rwanda plan, I would argue, were probably the correct ones.
Really? Because it just seems, I mean, on the face of it, it just seems a bit odd. We are exporting temporarily a problem that is affecting, or an issue, would be perhaps be a less contentious way of putting it, an issue that is affecting this country. We're exporting it to a completely unconnected country for them to deal with at vast expense to this country. It seems like an odd thing to want to see go to fruition.
Well, the argument would be that once a scheme such as the Rwanda scheme was seen to actually be taking place and individuals were seen to be being removed to that third country, then in terms of those networks, as we're talking about here, the social media networks and the kind of huge pull factor that does take place and undoubtedly takes place through networks such as TikTok and Facebook and what have you, you would see a sort of a knock-on effect. And we know for a fact that the larger the sort of irregular migrant population in a country, the more the compounding effect that does have on future flows, because word does travel, individuals begin to become aware of what the legal framework and what the ability and likelihood of them having a successful asylum claim in a country such as Britain would be, and therefore would be more prepared to make that crossing. Whereas if we had a few high-profile flights taking place to a third country, it is undeniable that actually people would be taking a second look at the opportunities that the people smugglers would be presenting to them and start to think, well, there's a chance that I might end up being removed to a third country, or I might end up being removed to my country of origin, and therefore is it really worth me shelling out up to £5,000 to make that crossing?
Yeah, unless I guess they actually intended to go to Rwanda in the first place, because it was painted by the Tories as a destination that you should put on your holiday list. They were telling us how great it was in order to counter some of the claims that this policy of theirs was cruel. So it's not much of a deterrent to send somebody to a holiday destination, is it?
Well, it depends on how many of the individuals you actually think were coming to Britain with the hope of making a flight to Rwanda. I'd argue it's probably still a less desirable place than Britain to be able to set up shop. I think the argument the Conservatives were making was really a pushback against those human rights claims and people sort of making appeals to human rights law that actually deportation to Rwanda would be in some way a breach of people's human rights. And people were, of course, pointing to track records of the recent Rwanda government as if to say that, you know, this isn't actually a safe country. And the Conservatives were, of course, pushing back on that and arguing, well, no, actually, you know, this is a country that's travel board advertises on the shirts of a major Premier League football club.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
I don't know how many individuals would have actually sort of come into Kent in the hope of ending up in Rwanda. I would argue it's probably quite few. Mm.
Let's talk about the practicalities of what the government is suggesting. They're saying that they want to ban social media adverts. Is social media the way in which people find out about people smugglers, or is it more likely through word of mouth when they arrive on the shores in France?
I think it's an element of both. We know for a fact, and has been put out in the press today, that about 80% of those people that are making the crossing are using social media and are aware of sort of opportunities and being put in touch with people through social media. There is, of course, as you rightly point out, this element of individuals just heading to northern France and then being able to figure it out from there and get put in touch with those individuals that can facilitate crossings. And journalists have in recent months been sort of ending up looking around in those northern Calais areas where there are large groups of migrants and have been very easily able to identify and be put in touch with people smugglers. But I think that the real point with this proposed sort of amendment to the legislation is that actually it really is limited in its scope, in that many people that are actually making a lot of money from this trade will look at the small numbers of people that are already being prosecuted by existing legislation, are looking at the potential benefits to themselves, are looking at the fact that, you know, if they don't step foot into Britain, there's very little that the British police forces can do or British enforcement can do to prosecute them, and think that it is probably worth the payoff and worth the potential, the tiny risk of being prosecuted. So I think it's really one of those where, you know, it, on paper, it looks like a great proposal, but in reality, the real-world implementation of this will be hamstrung for several reasons.
And what's the real-world consequence of making Britain an undesirable place for people to come to? Because there's an experiment going on in another country. Another country, well known to us, is rounding people up and very visibly deporting them. And the immediate result is that industry, farming, construction and so on are suffering because they can't find the labour anymore. I mean, I'm talking about America, of course. Could that be the consequence of a crackdown here?
Well, we know that those individuals that are coming across on the small boats are only a small part of the illegal migration that takes place in Britain. Many of them are visa overstayers and are actually being able to enter the country via other means, and therefore wouldn't really be affected by any attempted deterrent on this front. When it comes to those individuals that are coming in and claiming asylum, they of course don't have the legal right to work, and therefore it's a lot more difficult for them to enter the black market. But that is what they, in large part, do end up entering. It's sort of your clandestine car washes. It's of course doing work illegally in Deliveroo and Uber Eats and other apps, despite the government's best efforts to clamp down on it. And we need to ask ourselves whether actually it is a proper state of affairs where we have people without the right to work in this country being able to do so, or whether actually what we should be looking to do is to use those companies and the clout of those companies that they do have with those coming across the channel illegally and using that sort of draw factor and cutting it off at the seams. Because we know that, you know, there are a large number of individuals that work in Uber Eats, work in Deliveroo. It's a very casual part-time job for many people, and it's something that actually we're seeing an uptick in students and Brits themselves doing as well. So I don't think the actual industries that would be affected would be unable to find an alternative route for their labour, to meet their labour needs, sorry.
One of the issues is housing people who have come here seeking asylum, and a fast-track scheme to process asylum seekers is due soon. Do you think fast-track decisions mean good and fair decisions, or are they more likely to be unfair and then end up in court being appealed against, thereby slowing the process?
I think it's likely the latter. We know that at the moment already, as it is, about 50% of asylum applications that are processed and a decision is made, decisions that go both ways, of course, are not done to a particularly high standard. I think probably a better way to address the growing backlog, because of course we saw a record number of asylum applications last year. There were many individuals who, either at the first stage of their application or have had their initial application rejected and now appealing it in the courts. And that is in large part causing the backlogs in the hotels that are now spilling into housing. But a much better way to address this problem would be to look at what the Conservative Party were doing with the Illegal Migration Act, and to make it a fact that if you came into the country via irregular means, that you were not able to actually submit an asylum application. I think that would do a lot to actually draw down the pressures that the asylum system is undoubtedly facing, because, you know, everyone across the board admits that the asylum system is under a lot of strain. It is escalating costs, the costs for the last financial year that the Home Office actually accrued through the asylum system were, you know, twice as high as what they were actually originally forecast to be. So this is something that is clearly escalating. And I think we need to realise that actually the best way to solve that is to make sure that those people that are probably come in via irregular and improper means don't actually have the right to access the system in the first place.
That that Tory policy, though, put people with genuine asylum claims in a sort of a catch-22 position, didn't it? Because it said that you can't claim, as you mentioned, you can't claim asylum if you come here illegally, but they also made it difficult, if not impossible, for people to come here illegally. Legally.
Well, we are already one of, I mean, we often hear this, that there are no safe and legal routes. We're one of the biggest recipients of asylum seekers under UN schemes. And of course, actually only about 40% of those people that actually claim asylum each year come via the overtly irregular means of small boats. But a larger proportion of them are individuals who have come here on visitor, tourist or study or work visas even as well, and have then made an application that way once situations in their home country have changed or they've been able to effectively access that legal advice. So I think if we make it very clear that individuals that are engaging in a practice and coming into the country in a way that clearly even the current government deems to be not appropriate and not proper, and make it clear that that is actually not the way to access our asylum system, then we might see some of the pull factor that is currently in place as a result of the fact that these individuals can access the asylum system withdrawn somewhat and removed.
Good to talk to you, Rob. Thanks for that. That's Rob Bates, Director at the Centre for Migration Control. So what do you make of that and the idea that ministers have put forward that they are going to outlaw social media adverts promoting journeys on small boats across the channel to asylum seekers as a way to not stop entirely or totally solve this issue, but as a way to mitigate some of the effects of it. Small steps, I suppose. What are your thoughts? 0345 6060973. You can text 84850, email nicka@lbc.co.uk. And if you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060973.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So the Home Office said it wants to crack down on people smugglers selling a false narrative about life in the UK to desperate asylum seekers, and they are going to try to do that by criminalising those promoting illegal work online. The change will also make it a crime to post online content that encourages someone to break UK immigration law in exchange for money. Difficult to imagine that any of these things that they're proposing making illegal aren't already illegal, but maybe they're making them illegal-er, and by doing so, bringing them to the attention of the people that they are trying to attack's probably not quite the right word, but I'll go with that, attack in this way. What are your thoughts on this? 0345 6060 973. Coventry. Hello, John.
Oh, good evening, Nick. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, it was almost notes of your favourite film, Idiocracy, when you're hearing people saying, you know what, these asylum seekers, they're getting their tips from somewhere. Let's check social media out. Hold on. We haven't even got a law that says you can't advertise it and you can't profit off it. I mean, the Tories must have dropped the ball on that for 5 years, you know. I mean, they just didn't bother even having a look. And then Labour's come in, and they'll be getting it in the neck for putting this law in place, but at least they're doing something about it. But you're just thinking, why was it never, ever legal? What happened there?
I think quite often governments see something that they want to address, and they make a new law, which copies a law that already exists, which makes it look as though they're doing something when actually they really aren't.
Yeah, window dressing, they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like that thing about Brexit. I mean, Keir Starmer came out and he made that speech about they only realised that we didn't exist as far as Europe was concerned because we left Europe, and if somebody wants to get off the beach at France, they're effectively just going on a sailing ship. So, you know, they're just going on a little tour in a boat. So we don't actually, as an entity, exist. And that was a fact of law. And you're thinking, Brexit was 2016, and then we had the ratification in 2020, and then it's now 2025, and they're suddenly realising that, hold on, nobody looked into this. And you're thinking, I mean, I know Labour's getting it in the neck, so I'll say it again, but at the same time, Why is it being left so late? Why are so many things? Who's doing math on this? I mean, if you put somebody on the ground and you said, look, Joe Bloggs, how would you tackle this? You say, right, first I'll go to social media. Secondly, I'll talk to France about how they view the UK. And thirdly, I'll go after the people traffickers and whoever's buying 500 rubber dinghies, I'll go and close their bank accounts down. You know, I mean, it's not even rocket science, is it?
Well, I guess it's easier to talk about doing something than actually doing it. It is a problem that has been gifted the Labour Party from by the Conservatives, who made a lot of noise about this but didn't seem to have any positive effect on it.
If I was tasked with stopping this and I got 5% of the people traffickers' profits, there wouldn't be one person getting across that border, mate. I would stop it tomorrow. Guaranteed.
Well, can you start on Monday? Thanks a lot, John. So the ministers are to outlaw social media adverts, but if a social media ad or post is private and anonymous, which of course they very easily can be, how will this law actually be effective? I mean, it's all right saying that something is now forbidden, but if you can't tell who is doing the thing that has been forbidden, how are you going to forbid them from doing it? I mean, people could place an advert from anywhere in the world. Or could we be asking the police force in other countries to arrest people on our behalf? And the proposal also targets people communicating with each other for the furtherance of these crimes. But anyone with the scantest knowledge of IT will tell those people to simply switch to an encrypted app. Most phones come with them. They're free. So it's a lot of noise. And I guess maybe partly this is in order to tempt those who have been guided by Nigel Farage back into the team. A lot of what the Labour Party has been saying recently seems to be seems to have that about it, that they are saying things that they think those people who might vote Reform would like, in order to douse the flames of Reform before they've really started going. Jack in Bristol says, why can't we just say anyone come in here has to be able to fund themselves and won't be given a hotel to live in? That is part of the difficulty. I mean, if you're coming here legally, then there are rules and regulations that to that extent. But if you're fleeing a war, for instance, and your house is just blown up and you're trying to reach your family who happen to be living here, then you couldn't say that. It's easy to suggest, well,
you know, the solution is obvious. But when you're dealing with people, it all becomes very murky and muddy and much more difficult than it looks perhaps from the outside. Solutions do look simple when you don't have to actually enact them yourself. 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850, email nicka@lbc.co.uk. If you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060 973. Now, I'm going to take a break for the news, after which Rachel Reeves says Jeremy Corbyn has got a big ego and his new party is going nowhere. Also, just 29% now back Brexit. So, was it all worth it? Your thoughts? 0345 6060 973. It's just past 10:30 on LBC. The news headlines with Tim Daly.
The former chief immigration officer for the UK has told LBC a planned new crackdown on smuggling gangs will have no impact. Ministers are looking to create a new offence, which would also outlaw the promise of illegal working being promoted online. Hamas has announced it's prepared to work with the Red Cross to deliver aid to hostages it's holding in Gaza. The Israeli Prime Minister says he's been talking with the local delegation of the International Red Cross. And an investigation has begun in Greater Manchester following the death of a man who was found unresponsive in police custody. The policing watchdog says 26-year-old Ellis Rocks was detained at the Britannia Hotel near Wigan on Thursday evening. LBC weather, mostly dry overnight with increasing cloud cover and windy conditions developing in the north and the west as the night goes on. We'll see a low of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for Squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn. I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Are you ready to win big? Enter now at winplus.co.uk to win huge cash prizes and loads more. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Rachel Reeves has accused Jeremy Corbyn of having a big ego and insists that his new left-wing party does not represent a threat to Labour. Let's talk about this with Dr. George Eilert. He is a political scientist and historian, former South West Wiltshire Labour candidate, and has a PhD on Jeremy Corbyn. You can read Jeremy Corbyn. Good evening, Good Doctor.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. Do you think a party led by Jeremy Corbyn is a threat to Labour?
I absolutely think so, because I think Labour should spend their time using their 173-seat majority to actually change the country rather than attack Jeremy Corbyn. They're doing it because they're scared of the left getting organised outside of Labour, especially considering that a poll shows that the Corbyn party is level with Labour at 15% without even existing yet. And if some trade unions leave Labour, which is not beyond the possibility, you know, it can happen, then the Labour Party is dead. And if the trade unions go to support Corbyn Sultana's new party alongside the 600,000 people who've already signed up, then I do think that the Left Party could genuinely overtake Labour in the polls in the same way the Reform has overtaken the Tories. But we'll wait and see.
Well, in that scenario, the two biggest parties in the country would be Reform and whatever Jeremy Corbyn's new party is called.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. This is such an unpredictable time in British politics. You know, everything after Brexit was very unpredictable, but now we are seeing the end of the two-party system, and people want real change, and they're fed up with that two-party duopoly being let down by successive Tory and Labour governments, and Farage has really capitalised on this. But it should be reminded that Jeremy Corbyn's Labour won 12.8 million votes in 2017, and that's 3 million more votes than Starmer won in 2024, and the party actually won 11% of 2015 UKIP voters. So your party are not just a threat to Starmer. I do think that Farage is actually worrying about them as well, and I think we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Do you think that Farage should be frightened of this new party? Because between Starmer and Corbyn, on almost every metric, reform voters prefer Corbyn.
Oh, exactly, and that's sort of the point I'm making. Labour's whole strategy of, you know, demonising migrants, using language such as, you know, we're an island of strangers, in the attempt to appeal to the Reform Party, his strategy just isn't working. And like you say, you mentioned that poll showing Reform voters between Corbyn and Starmer, pretty much on every metric in relation to healthcare, the environment, so many other areas, Reform voters prefer Jeremy Corbyn. So that's why I do genuinely think, and like I say, as I just mentioned, in 2017, the Labour Party won 11% of 2015 UKIP voters. And that's a substantial amount, particularly if that is, you know, we can see if that is applied to Reform nowadays. I do genuinely think, you know, people are crying out for change, and they're either going to go for Farage or something else, because I think people are fed up with the two-party duopoly.
You know, when Jeremy Corbyn was running to be PM, he was subject to a press barrage, the likes of which probably no one on earth has received from the press in this country, except for Meghan Markle. Mm. Is it entirely likely that the press is going to do a similar job on him now he's stuck his head above the parapet again?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think the organised left need to be prepared for this. We need a political strategy that will cut through to voters. And like you say, in 2017, Jeremy Corbyn was already facing, you know, years worth of attacks, not bowing to a sufficient enough angle at the Cenotaph. And, you know, Corbyn rides a Chairman Mao style bicycle. All these things happened before the 2017 election, too. And they did intensify quite a lot. And in my thesis, I talk about this a bit more. But in 2017, when Jeremy Corbyn was talking about domestic policies such as renationalising the railways, scrapping tuition fees, a living wage, the Labour Party won 12.8 million votes. And the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn, I should say, won 12.8 million votes, again, 3 million more than Starmer achieved in 2024. So I do genuinely think that a popular message can cut through. And yes, Jeremy Corbyn is going to be attacked, and Zara Sultana, and the trade unions, but a political message that cuts through and resonates with voters, particularly when the cost of living crisis has got so much worse, I really think can cut through to a large percentage of the population.
And specifically, a younger percentage of the population. I mean, the demographics that go in Jeremy Corbyn's camp tend to be on the young side, am I right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, in 2017, 2019, the Labour Party under Corbyn faced, you know, unprecedented support from young people and unprecedented lack of support from elderly people. So that was very interesting. And those 18 to 24-year-olds in 2017, you know, now in the wider economy and everything like that. But if you look at opinion polls in relation to not just 18 to 24-year-olds in 2025, but also 25 and older, there's much more sympathy for left-wing policies, much more sympathy for Jeremy Corbyn as an individual. And I think it'll be very interesting to see more polling about Zara Sultana over the years as well, because, you know, Jeremy Corbyn is an important figurehead. I think he's going to be here for a while, and I hope he is for a while representing his constituents. But the future of the left, of course, we'll have to think about that. And I think Zara Sultana is going to be, you know, not just a great leader of the party, but also, I genuinely do think, a potential candidate for Prime Minister too.
Now, if Keir Starmer lowers the voting age to 16, is he not likely to be actually shooting himself in the foot? Because those younger people might possibly prefer anything that Jeremy Corbyn might come up with as a party than going with Keir Starmer.
I think there could be, you know, we'll have to see how many people, 16, 17-year-olds in the country are, but there was an opinion poll published relatively recently asking about favourability of politicians, and Jeremy Corbyn had, I think, a plus 18-point lead, whilst Keir Starmer had a minus 30-point net satisfaction. So young people aren't necessarily looking to the Labour Party. In 2024, I think a lot of people voted for the Labour Party tactically. that won't be the case after we've seen Labour act with 173-seat majority, using that majority to attack trans people, to punish the most vulnerable in society, and, yeah, just not change the country as they promised. And I think people are dying for that change. And I think young people in particular, when young people are struggling to get jobs, struggling to get on the housing ladder, seeing the climate, you know, absolutely in a horrible condition, and AI as well on top of that too, people will be demanding change. And Jeremy Corbyn's message not only resonated in 2017 and 2019 with young people, but I do think that party, with the policies to address these big issues, can do very well in 2029 amongst young people too.
Do you think that perhaps, though, what Jeremy Corbyn is offering is pretty much the same as what Farage is offering? Easy solutions to complicated problems, things that sound good but aren't really achievable in the real world.
I mean, most of Jeremy Corbyn's policies from the 2017 and 2019 manifesto have been implemented across the Western world, in particular Europe, in particular social democracies, and even social democracies with centre-right parties too. So nationalised railways, the UK is very unique in the circumstance where, you know, we've had the privatised railway model since 1992. I think it's been a catastrophic failure. And when you have a look at polling, the overwhelming majority of Brits support renationalising the railways. And the Labour Party have not gone far enough with this. And when it comes to water, we're seeing Thames Water potentially going bankrupt very, very soon, and other water companies charging, you know, absolutely incredibly high levels for water. And the UK is very unique because we're the only country in the world with privatised water. So when Jeremy Corbyn was talking about nationalising it, you know, a decade ago, he was right then and he's still right now. So I don't think it's about necessarily, you know, what you say, like easy answers to complicated problems. These policies have been implemented across so many countries and have made such a huge difference to tackle the cost of living crisis and so much more. So I think, yeah, I do think Corbyn's policies can really appeal. And opinion polls show that, you know, even a plurality of Conservative voters supported left-wing policies such as renationalisation in 2017 and 2019, and I think that will still be the case today.
Yeah, renationalisation is much more difficult than not selling it off in the first place, though, isn't it? I mean, you're comparing countries that didn't sell their water, which, as you say, is every country in the world but us, that didn't sell off, you know, all the family silver. There's practically nothing left, really, after the period from Maggie Thatcher onwards, mostly this country controlled by the Conservatives. But taking that back is going to be enormously more expensive and difficult than just imagining that it can be done. Do you think that the problem with power is that once you acquire it, you find that many of the things that you would like to do, you just can't?
Well, that might be the case. However, you know, I think when you have, you know, a country that's the sixth richest country in the history of the world, and we have more food banks than there are McDonald's in this country, and that was the case years ago. It's got even worse since then.
But isn't that a perfect example of it? I mean, the solution to that is the redistribution of wealth. But every time somebody says that, the answer is, well, you can't do that because the rich will leave.
Well, I don't think British politics should be, you know, under the thumb of essentially billionaires and, you know, the political system basically not doing change or not implementing change because we're worried about capital flight and people leaving the country. You know, where we need radical redistribution of wealth in this country, not just to address the rising levels of inequality, but also to help the poorest in society too. It is the right thing to do. And where we have seen wealth redistribution across the world, it has not been a bad thing. We need to do this because otherwise this country is going to get significantly worse. The cost of living crisis is making things extremely awful. And even 10 years ago, I think it was around 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, but it was around 12 million people had less than £100 in savings in their account. And that was, you know, a few years ago. Imagine the scenario now, because it's got significantly worse. Like, you know, the cost of living is squeezing people tighter than more than ever, and the rents are getting higher, bills are going up. Things need to change, and Corbyn's policy platform in 2017 and 2019 would have adequately addressed these, and it'll be very exciting to see what this new left party offers in terms of policy platforms, because we know broadly where they're going. We'll know they'll support public ownership of essential services, and again, this policy has been implemented across many countries across the world, so I don't think it's unachievable, but We need change now, and it's not reform are not going to deliver that change. We need radical redistribution of wealth, and I think I trust Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana more than Farage and Starmer any day.
And yet, I mean, you must have noticed that the poor are more likely to vote for parties that don't act in their interests. The poor are the demographic that votes more so than ABC ones for the Conservative Party, for instance. It seems as though we are determined to act outside our best interests. And if Jeremy Corbyn is trying to appeal to the poor, well, maybe he's not going about it the right way, because it seems as though old Etonians appeal to the poor more.
Well, you say that. I mean, you know, we can talk about why the Conservatives won in 2017 and 2019, and that's because they managed to unite their voter base around the issue of Brexit and were highly successful in doing so. But at the end of the day, when you actually look at the raw data from 2017 in particular, when you're looking at CDE voters, actually the Labour Party won a majority of support in 2017 from CDE voters. Again, it wasn't a substantial lead, but nevertheless, because the Conservatives were very good at mobilising their base behind Brexit. But nevertheless, you know, I want to counter that, because again, it's the whole argument of, can a left-wing platform, you know, win a mass popular support? And 12.8 million votes is one of the largest votes won by a political party in the history of British politics. And the Conservatives won that election because, again, you know, because of Brexit and other issues. But I think to discount the left and to ignore the 2017 election and to ignore those 12.8 million votes in that time in history, you know, I don't think that's why. I'm not saying you're doing that, by the way, but lots in the Labour Party don't want to talk about 2017, because it's not very convenient to talk about. But I do think a popular left-wing policy platform can inspire people, not just in the UK, but we've seen that across the world as well, where this happened in 2015 with Syriza in Greece and other things. Obviously, they've gone in a bad position, but, you know, a popular policy left-wing policy platform can inspire a lot of people and win a lot of support.
And yet, is this not the thing that the left specialise in? Fighting among themselves, wrestling each other to the ground so that the Conservative Party or some other right-wing party of the day steps nimbly over them and takes power.
Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves are not the left. And, you know, Keir Starmer said, you know, if you want to leave the party, if you don't like the changes we've made, you can leave. And now the organised left are getting together. They've left the Labour Party, of the trade unions. Some of them are still part of it. But Unite are reviewing their membership. Other trade unions are reviewing their membership. The Labour Party membership has gone from 600,000 to lower than 200,000. We don't even know if that's gone lower because Labour are no longer publishing their data. But this new left party, 600,000 people signing up in less than a week, already getting, you know, Zara Sultana joining from, you know, the Independent Alliance. And I think there is so much potential for this party to do well. And yes, of course, there'll be discussions about how things are done. And I think it'll be very interesting to see how the democracy of the party works. But, you know, if Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves are trying to sell themselves as left-wing, then, you know, they need to look at what they've done over the last year or so, because their policy platform has not been left-wing. It's punished the poorest. It's punished trans people. It's punished the most vulnerable. And it's time for change, because I'm not going to be voting Labour again, and so many other people won't be either.
Thank you, Doctor. That's Dr. George Aylett, political scientist and historian, former South West Wiltshire Labour candidate, and he has a PhD on Jeremy Corbyn. What are your thoughts on that? Topic that we were talking about before, the new government policy to attempt to stop the boats by banning social media adverts from people smugglers to advertise their fast route over. From France to here, I mean. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
LBC. Last week on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Another week making the news, starting with a man rarely out of the headlines.
Why are we setting up an elite police force to monitor what people say about illegal immigration? This legislation is the biggest threat to free, open debate and speech.
From safety online to safety on the streets.
What are the seven areas, then, geographical areas?
Now you'll have to forgive me. It's very early in the morning, but I do know them.
Perhaps you should know this, Minister.
Out of her depth? To someone who believes his sister should be out of jail. Disgraced Ghislaine Maxwell's brother Ian told me
Virginia Giuffre was a consummate liar. I shed no tear for Virginia Giuffre.
What does next week hold?
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Weekday mornings from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Bank
Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So Jeremy Corbyn, who led Labour to election defeats, albeit with quite high numbers in 2017 and 2019, he's setting up a new movement to challenge the old party from the left. He's been joined by Zara Sultana, former Labour MP, and is set to campaign on more wealth taxes and all of the other things that you might associate with Jeremy Corbyn. What do you think about the prospects for his party, and what you think, if he makes it a success, it might have as an effect on Labour, reform? I guess not much effect on the Tories. But is it possible that the Labour Party is now going to be pulled in two different directions, trying to quell an invasion from reform on the right and Jeremy Corbyn's new party on the left? 0345 6060 973. Bodmin. Hello, Malcolm.
Hello, Nick. And they criticise Mickey Mouse degrees.
I think it's a justifiable subject for study.
Okay. Well, Jeremy Corbyn, yeah. I had actually heard of a more silly one previously, and it was the life cycle of the earthworm as a PhD topic, but let's move on.
Also an important subject, I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, look, Nick, keeping this absolutely simple, okay? The left did not win the election last time round for the Labour movement. It was centre-left voters, and it was more importantly, I think, it was centre-right voters who couldn't vote for the Conservatives or Reform.
It was the Tories' collapse that allowed Starmer in.
And in future, if Labour moves in any way to the left, they will stand not an earthly chance of winning the next election. Now, for me, Nick, privatising the whole of the railway network, the water industries, the energy sector, it's literally impossible. And that's not me swallowing the Tory line. It's me acknowledging that the nation has got a $2.7 trillion debt. And Labour skewed it because they added $1.4 billion for the pensioner payment cut. Instead of adding 1.4 to the national debt by not cancelling the weather payments.
Too many numbers, Malcolm. My head's spinning.
All right, sorry, Nick. Look, what I'm saying is Labour have got themselves into a huge amount of trouble by cutting $1.4 billion, okay? They would have been in even more trouble if they would have had to have added to the debt by nationalising things. As the nation's economy allows, Nick, when that $2.7 trillion debt is gone, maybe we could buy some of these things back. But it's not a realistic prospect. And not only that, the everyday is more important. So taxes, keeping them down is very, very important. Keeping energy bills down is very, very important. So on mortgage rates and so on, keeping them down by keeping a sensible economy, Nick. Because if Corbyn gets anywhere near power, the markets will have a meltdown. Trust was bad, but this would be absolutely catastrophic if Corbyn got into power, Nick.
Well, yes, but we shouldn't be ruled by the markets, should we? We should be above that. We should do what's best for our citizens, and the markets can do as they please.
Well, no, Nick, the markets rule. We've seen what happens. Trump is spooking them every other week with the tariff game. The trusts absolutely scared the pants off our side of the markets because of what she wanted to do on maybe a much smaller scale in terms of spending than what Corbyn would like to do.
But it's a pretty dystopian world that we live in when countries are not being led by their elected representatives. They're actually being led by a handful of staggeringly rich billionaires who just play money for a living.
Well, forget the billionaires, Nick, right? But you take the markets. Without the markets, where do the Labour Party or any other British government, where do they get the money to do things that they can't actually afford to pay for out of the week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year tax take?
I wonder if we'll get to the position where, at the next election, we actually have four parties that are vying for winning. At which point, one of them will not get enough to actually win outright, and so there'll be deals done, and coalitions will be formed. And would it not make sense for a Corbyn-Labour coalition, more so than, let's say, a Corbyn-Lib Dem coalition?
It makes far more sense for Corbyn to make a choice between the Labour Party and the Conservatives or Reform than it does for him to split the Labour vote. If Corbyn is shooting every Labour supporter, be they hardcore like himself or moderates like myself, and maybe yourself, I don't know, and millions upon millions of others. He's doing literally nobody other than the 20% of the wealthiest or 10% or even the 1%. That's the only people Corbyn is benefiting, because Corbyn scares most people. He scares me. I wouldn't want him in power. Look, the people who got him into the leadership of the Labour Party thought they were being kind to the old fella. Now, they all say it was the biggest mistake of their political lives. And look where each of them are now. Look where the mayor of Manchester is. He's stuck in Manchester.
There's worse places to be stuck, Malcolm, but I appreciate that. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Croydon. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say two things, because I'm 22, so I'm on social media. I'm basically what they call chronically online. I'm never off my phone. But, you know, the government trying to block, like, people smugglers from posting content online, blah, blah, blah. It will never, ever, ever happen, because there is too much stuff online and nobody can filter through it to even see. I'm on TikTok. I've seen videos of the people on the small boats recording themselves coming in. I've seen videos of people from the Britannia Hotel, which is literally 2-3 days, literally recent, recording outside the window of the protesters. So it's not like it's something they could really filter through and say, okay, we're going to block this, and this is impossible.
I would agree with that. It does seem pretty difficult, yes. Impossible, perhaps, because that's the nature of social media. You can post things completely anonymously. I don't know how they would go about doing that. Andover. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Nick. Good evening. These people, smuggling people, they must be quaking in their boots as they sip their vodka in their Russian mansions or Bulgarian farmhouses or wherever they are. This 5-year jail sentence for posting online is absolutely absurd. There's already a 17-year jail sentence for people smugglers. So what is this? This is just gesture politics, isn't it? And the Labour Party, I've been a Labour voter for all of my life. The Labour Party, I just aren't grasping the nettle. They're just doing gesture politics. They've had the opportunity. They've got a 170-seat majority.
But don't you have sympathy with the fact that the Tories have been smashing up the place for the last 14 years? And he might look like Harry Potter's dad, but the man's not a wizard. Keir Starmer can't come in and just fix 14 years of destruction inside a couple of years. It's going to take a while. And you have to break things more in order to put them back together again. Do you have no sympathy at all?
Yeah. I've got two questions. But my first point is that Malcolm down in Cornwall, he could go and do a surfing degree. Now, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see Malcolm on a surfboard. But anyway, back to reality.
I'm not quite sure what that was about. But unfortunately, whatever that was took up all of your time. But I appreciate that, Mike. Coming up, this is not nice. A 22-inch rat has been found inside someone's home. We're talking to a rodent specialist about what is going on. If you've had a close encounter with one of these monsters, I want to hear about it. Have you had a problem with rats? And if so, how'd you get rid of them? 0345 6060 973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. The government's announced it will spend an extra £100 million on its push to combat small boat crossings to the UK. It says the money will be used to support the pilot of a new one-in, one-out returns agreement with France, new technology, and up to 300 more National Crime Agency officers will also be paid for by the move. But Rob Bates at the Centre for Migration Control has been telling Nick Abbott on LBC the government needs to do something more practical.
Kevin Saunders, the former Chief Immigration Officer of the UK, I think he was there for about 15 years, put it best when he said that if the Labour Party really want to sort of tackle this issue, the best route they can go down is actually looking to remove some of those pull factors that are making the crossings and making the opportunity of getting into Britain so enticing for individuals that are coming across the Channel.
The members of Oasis say they are shocked and saddened after a man fell to his death during a concert at Wembley last night. Witnesses have said he fell from a balcony. LBC's Lindsay Smith-Hume has more.
The Met Police have confirmed a man in his 40s died during yesterday's Oasis gig. Officers on duty at Wembley Stadium, along with medics at the venue, responded to reports that a man had been injured at around 10:20 yesterday evening. We're told he had injuries consistent with a fall and was pronounced dead at the scene. Police are keen to hear from anyone who witnessed what happened or who may have unknowingly caught it on videos on their phone.
A fifth person has been charged by counter-terrorism police over damage to aircraft during a protest at RAF Bryce Norton in June. Mohammed Umar Khalid, who's of no fixed abode, is due before Westminster Magistrates Court tomorrow. The banned organisation Palestine Action claimed responsibility. People in Scotland are being urged to plan ahead after warnings a major storm will batter the country tomorrow. An amber weather warning has been applied to most of it for Monday. The forecaster John Ketley has been talking to LBC.
There'll be a wraparound of severe gale force winds affecting many parts of the country, and that means to say we're going to have disturbing winds causing lots of damage, especially across Scotland. It'll also cause dislocation to traffic, of course, travel, vessels being abandoned, cancelled across there in the Irish Sea.
And days after a major earthquake, a volcano has begun erupting in the far east of Russia. Scientists say it's on the Kamchatka Peninsula and probably hasn't produced lava or ash for hundreds of years. LBC weather mostly dry overnight with increasing cloud cover and windy conditions developing in the north and the west as the night goes on. We'll see a low of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
And An enormous 22-inch rat was found in a home in Redcar and Cleveland. The rat, which is a potentially record-breaking sized thing, was discovered recently in a property in the Normanby area, not Normandy, Normanby area, by a pest controller who'd been called in to investigate. It's unknown how it accessed the property. Must have been a pretty big hole. Let's talk about this with David Parnell. David is a professional pest controller and owner of D. Parnell Pest Control. Hello, David.
Hello, good evening, Nick. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks for being here. Well, we've got rats the size of cats now. Is this unusual, or have rats got bigger lately?
Well, to be honest with you, Nick, nothing surprises me at all. I mean, even 20 years ago, the largest rat that I managed to capture was 20 inches long, so... like everything in this world, if you eat too much, you grow, and they're no different. So this is what's happening. There's a number of things we need to take into account here. I mean, you know, rats themselves are actually opportunists. So wherever there's food available, they will find it. They're hardwired to do that.
Right. So it's actually our fault, isn't it? Because they wouldn't find the food if we weren't leaving it lying around the place.
Absolutely. But look, we've got a number of issues here, and it's like a perfect storm that's come together. And I've got my own personal experiences with these. I mean, I'm now averaging between 8 and 10 rat problems in homes every single week now. And I mean, it never, ever used to be like that. And this is basically attributed to a number of things. First of all, we've got hard, you know, strapped-cashed water companies that are just not, you know, spending the money on the upkeep of the sewers, etc. I mean, rodent escapes from the sewer through drains is becoming absolutely rife. I've had poor just in the last week alone. So that's just down to poor maintenance on the part of the water companies. We've got cash-strapped councils which are extending the collections for waste, etc. All right, so we've got more waste on our streets. There seems to be a culture, somewhat for some reason, of people that just feel it's okay just to discard, just take away rubbish and stuff like that on the street. That is exacerbating the thing. We've got issues with people just not caring for how they deal with their household waste. I've got waste bins that I'm called out to. There's no lids on them. They've got holes in the bottom of them. Waste is accumulating on the streets, and people are saying, well, I've got a rat problem. Why is this? I mean, it's so obvious. It really is just so obvious.
So it's a question of too little money and too many morons.
Well, basically, I think that's probably what I have to say here. I mean, one of the things I actually say to people is, listen, if you take on board everything I say, then you can make me redundant. And I can say that to people, and honestly, but people just don't take it on board. And of course, the first thing is, I get called into something like this, and people say, I wanted to put boxes all the way around my garden, or in my kitchen, or up in my loft, because I've got rats in the loft, etc. But the first question for me is, why have we got a rat problem here? Where are they getting their food from? Where are they getting their water from? Water is more important to them than food. And usually the water aspect of it takes me down into the drains. 98% of these problems that I go out to are drainage related. And that's why I spend so much time in the drains doing repairs and installing valves and things like that. And actually trying to solve a problem rather than earning a living off the back of it. And that's what I do. Let's solve these problems rather than just put a sticking plaster on them.
Well, you know, most people will go a lifetime without seeing a rat. I've lived in London for 47 years, and I've only seen two. Are we witnessing an increase in the population of rats compared to normal, or are they
extremely brazen creatures? And as I said before, they are opportunists. And of course, don't overlook the fact that their teeth are razor sharp. They're sharp as the best knife in a chef's drawer. So if there's an opportunity to gnaw out of somewhere to get to some food, then that's what they'll do. Our rat population in the sewers is absolute. The main sewers and the drains, these are all the shared ones, etc. And part of that adoption process included a sewer baiting protocol. And from what I can see, they're just not doing that. And the rat populations in the sewers are absolutely exploding. And my findings are bearing that out perfectly. Exactly what's happening.
Well, they've got a lot to answer for, don't they, the water companies? They're polluting our seas, and they're causing an explosion in the rat population.
Absolutely. I mean, I've actually in the past asked to see evidence of rodent control in the drains and the sewers, and nobody seems to be able to produce it for me. And that, I find that extremely worrying. I really do. But, you know, a lot of these problems can be solved without using poisons or rodenticides, as we call it. And that's the first thing people want to do. They say, right, let's put some poison down. Let's find out what's gone wrong first. What is it? Well, look, we've got a pile of waste bags there. They need to go. All right, we've got a hole in the drain there. That needs to get repaired, etc. And that's my view on it. That's the way I, as a professional, that's how I look at all of these problems. And, you know, look, what is the cause? What's causing this? Rather than just trying to put a sticking plaster on it. So I hardly use any rodenticide. I use physical means of control and stopping the problem in its tracks. And that is the best way of dealing with it.
Do rats serve any valuable function in the environment? Because foxes are considered a pest by many, but they eat rats.
Yes, they do. Look, rats are bottom-end scavengers. And, I mean, they in our sewers, they thrive on a diet of human waste. I mean, you know, it doesn't get any more disgusting than that, and it's quite evident when you actually go into the sewers and see all this sort of stuff. So they are scavengers, and they are clearing things up. But, of course, like everything, you know, wherever there's a huge accumulation of desirable food or waste, they're going to be there, and, of course, their numbers will increase accordingly. And that is what everybody needs to be aware of. You know, it's a very, very worrying concern. And, unfortunately, at the moment, I can't see it getting any better. I really can't.
To my eye, the number of foxes has increased over the past few years. Has the population of foxes affected the rat population?
Look, foxes will predate on rodents. And actually, there's a correlation here, because when people start poisoning rodents, the rodents become slow and they're easier for foxes to catch. And then, of course, we've got issues with secondary poisoning, which is why we don't like using rodenticides. But foxes are primarily there because they've got access to loads of food. We've got so many people I've heard of that are physically feeding these creatures. And, of course, you know, if you feed a population, it's like feral pigeons. If you keep feeding them, their numbers grow accordingly. And it's nature. That's what nature does.
I've also noticed recently that councils have stopped mowing many of their verges and other open green spaces in order to, provide better habitat for insects and so on. But right. Is that also having an unintended consequence of providing a habitat for rats?
Well, not really, because, well, yes and no in some ways. Look, where you've got grass verges that are getting longer, any rubbish that is accumulating isn't readily seen, is it, you know? But rats cannot survive without this water source. So water is crucial. Of course, we've had a very, very dry summer. Leaving verges and areas of green spaces to grow for nature is one thing. And, yes, they can provide harbourage. But to a rat, it's no point in having any harbourage if you've got nothing to eat and you've got nothing to drink. So, you know, it's a bit of a misdemeanor, really. But
why do they want to come into people's homes? Because most animals are scared of human beings. They don't really want to bother with us. I mean, insects aside, you know, mammals, they almost never, cross the threshold. So why are rats so keen to get inside?
Well, look, rats have got very poor eyesight, but they are hardwired to search for food. And with so many of them breaking out of the sewers, coming underneath people's homes, they find holes, they smell food. And then subsequently, the next thing we know, they're actually in a kitchen somewhere. They're running up through the walls. They're up in the ceilings, in the loft spaces. They're only coming in basically because, A, they like to explore their territory thoroughly, and secondly, I can smell food here. There's a meal on the plate. Let's search that out and let's go and get it. And that's it. That's why they're there.
So how do you?
They are bold. They're very bold and very brazen. When I'm down in the drains, I often have them run between my feet. So yeah, they're very bold. Very bold.
So how do you prevent these things from getting into the house?
Right. First of all, there's three ways that rats get into properties. One is through a hole in the side of the building. So, you know, a builder or a plumber's knocked a brick out to run a pipe through, hasn't cemented up round it. All right. The second way is through an open door. We've had some nice warm evenings. And even more so, you know, there's an issue if you've got companion animals like cats and dogs. So They can smell the food inside the house, the animal food, because at the end of the day, rats and mice are what we call commensal, which means from the same table. So they live in close proximity to other creatures, all right? The third way is through the drains. I've never, ever known them come in via parachute. So it's got to be one of those three ways. So when I'm dealing with a rat problem in a house, I've got this tick. I've got three boxes to tick. Is it an open door? And the signs of it being an open door, for instance, would be I've had a pipe. I've had a waste pipe that's been gnawed through. I've got a flood in the kitchen. The rat has done that because it needs water. It hasn't got a natural source of water as per in a drain. So it'll go and look for one. It can smell the water in the pipes. It'll chew through the pipes to get water from a waste pipe and a dishwasher or a washing machine. All right. You also may actually notice the bottom of the door where the rat has come in will be chewed away. So you'd come down in the morning and think, crikey, what's been gnawing away at the bottom of that door? That's another sign of a rat that's come in through an open door. So those are the two key things. So those are the two questions asked. Any floods? Any gnawing inside the kitchen? No, nothing like that. Right. No holes on the outside of the building? Right, it's not that. Then I'm down in a drain. I'm looking for drains. I'm looking for uncapped drains where extensions have been done. Drains have been moved, etc. Things haven't been capped off properly. And that's when they come in. And it's prolific. It really is. I mean, I earn a very good living out of basically poor workmanship.
So that's how you can see, or you can maybe avoid them getting into your house. Is there any way you can avoid them getting into your garden?
Right, yes, there is. The top thing that causes rat problems in gardens is bird feeding. You know, excessive bird feeding, I see it all the time. And, you know, obviously, if you can stop feeding the birds, then that problem is solved within 24 to 36 hours. They are gone. And especially if you can tip up any small incidental water catchments or anything like that. Just you know, to anybody that's feeding the birds or anything, if you see anything that you don't really want to feed, then remove the bird feeders, tip the water catchments up so they haven't got water, and then suddenly your garden environment has become a very hostile place for a rat to live and survive. So there's a tip there. Likewise, when we've got bins, I mean, with waste bins, you know, please do not dump black bin bags, you know, next to bins when it gets full up or something like that. Try and recycle more. Clean recycling as well. Clean the recycling. Wash the bottles and stuff out. I do a lot of work at our local waste transfer station, and filthy recycling causes so many rodent issues. It's unbelievable, and it's so unnecessary as well.
Does the presence of a dog help?
Well, in a house, actually, it doesn't. It makes it worse because, as I just said to you before, rats are what we call commensal. So they're actually drawn to the smell of the dog and the smell of the dog food, and they will come in and they will run the gauntlet. Many occasions I've been in where, for instance, somebody's got a cat. And how often have we seen people with a bowl of cat food behind? Well, I don't know what it is, why cats need to graze all day. And, of course, if you've got an open door on an evening or something and a rat has smelled that food, I mean, bearing in mind that their sense of smell is their number one sense. They will hone in on things like that at 20 metres. They'll search it out. If they find a bowl of food, invariably there's a bowl of water next to it. Happy days. In we go. And they will run the gauntlet. They really will. And they cache their food. They'll take it and they'll cache it. You'll find stores. Many, many a time I've pulled kitchen plinths off and I've found piles of cat food or dog food behind kitchen plinths. It's like all the bits of the jigsaw falling together. Honestly, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And do rats have a keen memory for where they have previously found food? In other words, once you get rid of one infestation, are you more likely to have another one in the future?
Yes, you can, because they leave a very powerful pheromone behind. Their fur it has got oils in it. It gives off pheromones, and that's why we get this very strange occurrence of what we call rat runs across gardens and things where there's a bird feeder. And what that rat is doing, he's following the scent that he's actually left behind, and that scent will last. Well, I mean, if it's an enclosed area, it'll last for years. So the number of times I go into people's houses, right, yeah, this is the second time we've had a rat problem here. Funny enough, we're hearing them in the same spot up there in the ceiling. It's because subsequent rats that have come in, they've just purely followed a pheromone trail to where their predecessors have been. So there is an occurrence of that, but of course, it's finding the source of that. If it's a drain, you know, a hole in the side of the drain, you know, and I mean, another clue to this is if you get suddenly you get holes that open up in your lawn, but there's no spoils, there's no digging around them or anything like that. That's a sign of a rat that's come through from underground. All the spoils will be underground. That's all the diggings, etc. Will all be underground. So it's then a matter of right. Okay, that if when I get instances like that. This tells me I've got a breach. You know, I've got a breach from the drain. Let's find the drain and let's repair the side of the drain so that they can't escape. And then the problem's done. We're finished.
And if you have to actually deal with getting rats out, and you say that you don't like to use poison, what are you left with?
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes you do have to resort to that. But if you've got rodents that are trapped in a house. By and large, I mean, the best thing to do really would be to install some traps. You know, and I there's some very, very good traps that are on the market. I use those. One of the favourite things that I find that they're really attracted to, believe it or not, is licorice all sorts. You put a licorice all sort in a trap and you're very likely to pick something up. But rats are also very, very neophobic. So, and the neophobe, what that means is they've got an aversion to new objects in their environment. So they will avoid new objects. And in fact, it would be a bit like you or I prodding a sleeping bear and thinking, is it dead or is it just asleep? You know, and then you jump back when it moves. With an adult rat, a fully fledged adult rat, it might take anything up to 10 or 12 days before he'll actually accept the bait that's in that trap. If it's a juvenile, a youngster, what I call like a teenage rat or the equivalent of, you can usually pick them up very, very quickly. But yeah, that's going to be the best way of dealing with that, really. You know, once you start using rodenticide or poison, as the public would call it, you then run the risk of that rodent dying in the property. It might die on the wall. It might die underneath the floor. Then, of course, you've got an awful smell for about 4 to 5 weeks. And then after that, you've got a big infestation of blowflies, which are horrible big black flies. Nobody wants that. So I try and avoid using any rodenticide, and especially, you know, in people's properties. But if this is a rat problem that's originated from a drain and I've managed to resolve the rodent problem in the drain by, for instance, either closing the hole off or installing a stainless steel valve to allow the waste out that the rats can't get back through, then normally what I'll do is I'll actually put the rodenticide, you know, on a wire inside the drain, which means as the rat goes back into the drain to get the water, and of course you've got the water, you've got the bait, you've got the two together, that's very suitable. They're very, very, they operate in very much the same way that we do. When they eat, they like to drink. So if you're going to use any rodenticide, you know, you need to have a bit of water nearby, and down the drain is the best way. And of course, ultimately, you're not actually baiting, technically, you're not baiting inside the property, but there is always the risk that they might still die inside. But I try and avoid issues like that if I can.
Well, it sounds like you're not going to be in want of work anytime soon. David, very good to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time. David Parnell, professional pest controller, owner of D. Parnell Pest Control. So have you had a problem with rats? And if so, how'd you deal with it? Do you think that the population of rats is actually getting bigger? Are you seeing more of them now? I've hardly seen any in my entire life. Maybe two outside. I had a problem in my house with one. I'll tell you about that in a minute. Dealt with pretty smartly, actually. I thought it was going to be a major problem, but it was identified and gone within a day. What about the way that we have our rubbish collected? Because in a lot of places now, you've got the separate food caddy, which is not a secure thing. I mean, I've had so many of those things, and that sort of spindly handle that is supposed to keep the lid on is just no good. I mean, foxes know precisely how to get into those things, and they'll just spread the food about, and that is an open invitation for rats to come. So maybe ditching the food waste and putting the food waste in with the regular rubbish and putting it in a big bin with a brick on top of the lid might be a better idea. I don't know. And what about other pests? Have you noticed that you are suffering from other pests as well as or instead of rats? 0345 6060 973 LBC.
This is LBC.
OK, train from London to peaceful Peterborough.
Ning Park's this way, huh?
Gorgeous. Wow. Never thought I'd be this into bird watching.
Did you see it? Lovely plumage.
Train home. Brilliant day. Oh, gotta rent bikes next time to see the big lake. And more birds, obviously.
Download the Thameslink Railway app and save with advanced tickets. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Well, it's a pretty gruesome subject, but at least there are no pictures on radio. But there are in the mail of an enormous 22-inch rat that was found, I mean, presumably that's including the tail, that was found in a home in Redcar and Cleveland. And the sort of meat of the story is that rats are getting bigger and more numerous. Is that something that you've noticed? And if you've had a rat problem, how'd you deal with it? The rat, this 22-inch monster, which was a potentially record-breaking size for the UK, was discovered recently in a property in the Normanby area by a pest controller who had been called in to investigate. They don't know how it accessed the property. It's believed to have been nesting inside, but rats had been reported in back alleys nearby. Is this a common thing? Because I've hardly ever seen a rat in my life. Twice. I've been living in London for 47 years, and I've seen one twice. One was colossal, and it was just waddling casually down the middle of the road in the middle of the afternoon, and that was in Clapham. And the other was on the South Bank, and one darted in front of me late at night. Just in front of Tate Modern. But that was when the Tate Modern was a building site. And apparently that is something else that they like, building sites, because, you know, builders tend to leave sandwiches and Coke and all of the rest of that stuff lying around. One of the problems is that councils have been, you know, it's all connected. Councils have been defunded by 14 years of Tory austerity. And that is one of the reasons why they are picking up rubbish less frequently. And that is also a problem, because rats like nothing better than what we throw away. And also, if there is a big rat problem, it's kind of our fault, isn't it? Most of what ails the world is down to us. We can't be bothered to put stuff in bins. We just have finished with an item of food and open our hands and let it fall to the floor. What do we expect? The Eston Ward councillors that are the councillors for this area where this massive rat was found pointed out that the council no longer handled domestic rat infestations, instead expecting residents to foot the bill themselves. Well, is it too much to pay for a man to come around with a couple of traps or whatever he or she deems necessary to get rid of the problem? Is I think whatever they're charging, just pay it. Glasgow, hello, Eric.
Sorry, Nick, that was quick.
Hey, Eric.
That was very quick.
Very quick, yes.
Very quick indeed.
Very good, thanks.
I know a few rats talking to the council. Anyway, just a joke. Nick, it's a human hygiene problem I think we're having in the United Kingdom. It's a personal human hygiene problem, and a problem that the council aren't dealing with.
What, you mean morons let just drop their litter in the road?
Well, that's unfortunately the way of society, and especially in cities, if we were not... was it Birmingham? There was a topic on LBC a little while ago.
Yeah.
About the trouble with Birmingham, and Birmingham were having a lot of problems with...
Well, they got a bin person's strike, yes.
They get a bins person strike, right? So that's maybe a wee bit of a you know, let's work together a little bit here, right? You know, so if I've got the problems with the council not managing to deal with the waste, but another thing as well, Nick, are we running out of space for all this waste? The landfills, and then we're not burning the stuff because it's bad for the environment. So what is that? And we won't go into the people. There's a lot of people coming into the country. There's nothing wrong, but that's a different subject. But there's more and more people coming into the country.
Yeah, more and more people will probably mean more and more rats. Yeah, because we're not the most hygienic of species, and we tend to just strew our detritus around and expect somebody else to come and pick it up.
Here's one for you. I was looking online earlier on about the depth of the sewers underneath cities, how deep they are underneath the roads. So if you're walking along, say, Argyle Street, or you know Edinburgh quite well, Princess Street, or whatever, or Tottenham Court Road in London, or any other big street, I wonder how deep the sewers are underneath the pavements and the roads.
Why, do you think it makes it... You think that would make a difference to the rats? They wouldn't be able to get out.
No, I think it would make a difference if we drilled a little bit lower and managed to get them into the sea. But then they could go back to Darwin because Darwin called it the sea.
We could sluice them out into the waters. Well, that's an interesting idea, Eric. Yeah. All right, leave us with that. Thanks. 0345 6060 973. Stephen York says, I've had a rat living under my built-in kitchen units for 6 months. It's been a nightmare, he says. Yeah, I bet. Your rat man is so right. It got in through the next door, but not capping an external pipe off. It then chewed through the washing machine cold water pipe, partly behind the kitchen plinths. God, what a nightmare. Have you not... Well, I'm asking a computer screen now because Steph's not on the phone, but have you not had somebody in to take a look at that? I managed to fix my rat problem within a day. And it was extraordinary. I mean, it was just remarkable how easy it was and how difficult a problem I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't. I'll tell you about that in a bit. Got to go to the news now. After which, Storm Floris is set to batter Scotland with 85-mile-an-hour winds. We'll hear about that and the prospects for the rest of the summer after the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The government has announced it will spend an extra £100 million on its push to combat small boat crossings to the UK. It says the money will be used to support the pilot of a new one-in, one-out returns agreement with France. The members of Oasis say they are shocked and saddened after a man fell to his death during a concert at Wembley last night. Witnesses have claimed he fell from a balcony. And two men have been charged in connection with disorder outside a hotel housing migrants in Essex. They're due before magistrates in Chelmsford tomorrow. LBC weather, mostly dry overnight with increasing cloud cover and windy conditions developing in the north and the west as the night goes on. We'll see a low of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
Can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about OptiMap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians.
Selected stores, charges apply. Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
Oh, bad traffic. Great news, isn't it? More time in the car. Joy. Maybe you don't feel it. Maybe you don't drive a Lexus NX yet. But when you do, you'll see the positive of peak hour, the delight in a detour, the love of the long way. The Lexus NX plug-in hybrid. Experience amazing before you arrive.
Kate's just off to work after sleeping in the best bed in the business. And my word, doesn't she look ready for anything? Something about her smile is just brighter. Her eyes seem glintier. And she just feels so much more Katie-er. Of course, it's no surprise, really, because last night she slept at Premier Inn. And she got up to 15% off with Business Booker. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. T's and C's apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Just this last week, about 25 million Americans were under a state of emergency because of the weather. Vehicles were submerged as major expressways became rivers. Water poured through the roofs and walls of a New York subway. Residents in basements were told to move out. Grand Central Station was flooded. Fallen trees blocked railway lines. 18,000 people were without power in New Jersey. Flash floods turned car parks into lakes. And hundreds of flights were cancelled or delayed. Let's talk about this with Jim Dale, founder and senior meteorological consultant at British Weather Services. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
Just another week on Planet Abnormal.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've only got one of them, haven't we? And that's a saying that bans around. We've got to look after it.
And you're that's right. That's just America, isn't it? I mean, presumably there's crazy things happening elsewhere too.
Yeah, there is. But particularly on the other side, when I say the other side, Japan. I'm not talking here about any earthquake or anything that may have caused a flutter over that side. I'm talking about heat extremes, real heat extremes that have been going on for day after day after day. And these are records falling right across Japan. Now, not just for the month of July or the early part of August as we're in, but all-time records. So, and it's perpetual. It's not like it's just one week of it and it's gone, a bit like we're getting here occasionally. It's not that at all. It's sustained, and it's sustained there. It's sustained, obviously sustained in the Middle East, but we're talking now the Irans of this world, 50, 52 degrees virtually every day. Scandinavia as well. You wouldn't
really
think so, would you?
No.
Yes. Yeah, the same Norway, Sweden, Finland. Same sort of records falling. Now, it's not 50 degrees, it's not even 40, but it is 30 in places, 30, 31, 32. And again, not just for an odd day here or there, but for a couple of weeks now. So that the extreme weather that we had, the 35 degrees, that type of thing, just shifted across slightly. And we got into the colder pool here in the UK. And I say the colder, the cooler pool, warm occasionally, that sort of thing. But no, nothing out of the ordinary. But you know what? This is the two sides of the coin. This is, you know, just because we go through a temperate period of weather, somewhere else gets the heat. And it's not just one place. It's spread over these huge continents. And if it's not the heat, it's the, as you've mentioned already, it's the floods, tremendous floods, torrential in certain places. So it's kind of one or the other, or you're kind of in between waiting for the next bus to arrive.
I was reading an article about what they describe as a rare Atlantic Niña event, which is ongoing across the tropical Atlantic. And they said it's going to have a growing influence on hurricane activity. Do you know much about this?
Yeah, not a great deal. I'd say that came out of the... I did read a little bit about it. And it's kind of what we say, waiting in the wings for something to happen as far as the hurricanes are concerned. Now, if the script was it's going to kill these hurricanes off the hurricane season and you know, and make it a minor one, I'm not so sure that's the case. I think there's enough heat in the oceans in the Gulf of Mexico and in the eastern Atlantic as well. They're actually born. Let's be brutal about this or correct about it. Most of the hurricanes are born off the west coast of Africa. That's where they start. And then they move across, they get caught in the trade winds, and hey, presto, they go where they need to go, whether into the United States, whether into Mexico, or they come around the bend and eventually come towards ourselves as an ex-hurricane, and that can happen as well. So I think on this one, Nick, I think we've got to sit and wait. Let's just see what's going on. There's an extraordinary amount of heat, both particularly in the Pacific, by the way. Some parts of the Pacific are 8 degrees above what they should be at this time of year, on average. 8 degrees. And the Atlantic isn't too far behind, even our own shores, 4 and 5 degrees. And this is why it's important that we watch the storm that's coming in this next 24 hours, Storm Floris, because obviously it's gaining energy as it's hitting that, that water.
Let's talk about that in just a second.
But yeah.
What they said in this article was that this unusual event, and what is a Niña? Just so we know.
Well, there's an El Niño and a La Niña, so it's a cross between the two, I believe. I've got to say, sometimes you throw a question at me and I'm thinking, you know, what the hell are you talking about here? I did see it, but I didn't really go into it with any right. particular detail, because my world, as you can imagine, is full of data, stats, this and the other, and sometimes you miss the odd thing that happens.
But they tantalizingly said it will bring us early clues about the upcoming winter across the US, Canada and Europe, but they didn't tell us what those clues were.
Yeah, and they're being very, well, I say they're being very, what's the word here? Not giving too much away at this yet.
Cagey.
Cagey is the right word. You're right. It's a cagey. They're having a cagey approach. Why? Because the winter's a hell of a long way away at this moment in time. And to be honest with you, what we're talking about here is a science that is not necessarily where it needs to be at this moment in time. In other words, we're still finding out. So I think this is dipping your fingers in the icy water, if you like, for a winter that can come. I think we can talk about that in weeks and months to come rather than now and double guess things, because there's enough on our plate with the summer weather that we're having in the northern hemisphere and the winter weather that we're having in the southern hemisphere, where there's been snow in Queensland.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I had messages from people from Australia during my other shows, and they were saying it's pretty miserable down there in Australia, where you wouldn't think that it would be. I mean, that's not what you associate Australia
with. It's snow in the first instance into Queensland, and then it's all turned to rain. You might have seen the British Lions and the thunderstorm and everything that went with that. So, yeah, they're having a bit of an hard time, but it is winter. So, let's think, you know, about Australia. It gets big weather, more than we do. So, in other words, when it rains there, it can rain like billy-o, and the heat can be extreme, etc. Even at this time of year, it can do that in the northern part of it or the central part. So, you know, these continental areas, which is what that is, they have a different description of climate and the extremes that they may get, along with America, along with Asia and other parts of the world as well. So you see, it translates itself occasionally to something that they don't necessarily want.
And the other rare thing that was announced this week was a rare yellow weather warning for winds for this coming week. And that's this storm Floris, right?
Yeah, and it's not yellow, it's amber. So I'm going to take you through it now. Floris is, it is the sixth storm of the 24-25 season. The sixth storm, the last one being Eowyn, back in end of last January, long time ago. Now, it's unusual to get a storm in August, but it's not unprecedented. We've had five since 2020. The last one was Storm Lillian back on the 22nd of August, 2024. So this Floris is, give or take as we speak, is about 984 millibars, for those who know about these things. So it's deep. And I mentioned the sea temperatures, and it's gaining traction off energy. It's gaining energy off that sea surface. So, this is I'm going to say it's a Scottish storm, because essentially the amber warning is plastered right over the entire Scotland. So in a funny old kind of way, they're getting their independence in a way that they don't want it, because it is basically Scotland in terms of the highest winds, a little bit of Northern Ireland, a little bit of Northern England, especially Northwest, and a little bit of North Wales. But generally speaking, it's a Scottish affair. And it's summer, and it's a bank holiday today. So, how can I put this? There is dangers out there. That's why it's amber. Think about a summer situation, and if you're listening in Scotland and you're thinking about doing things tomorrow or today, you've got to really think about what you're doing. As in, don't walk in forests or woods. Don't go into the coastal area and hang off watching the waves come in, thinking you're going to be safe necessarily. And even watch your back as you're walking down the street if you're going to venture out at all, because things will be flying around. Trees are in leaf. It's unusual. So these sort of things, when they occur in summertime particularly, they've got an added pedigree to produce danger. So the warnings are there for very, very good reason. You should take note. And at best, if you think you don't really want to chance it, then I would suggest very much that you actually stay in.
Yes, and that the fact that the leaves are still on the trees is important, yes, isn't it? Because a storm in the winter can just blow straight through a tree, but all of those leaves will act like a sail, and it's much more likely that trees will start falling.
Yeah, a sail or a wall, if you like, because some of these trees are still in big leaf. In other words, it will act like a barrier, like a wall, and therefore, with gusts of around 70, 75, maybe as upwards of 80 miles an hour. I know parts of Scotland are used to this. Let's make that clear, first of all. If this was southeast of England, we'd be in real trouble by now, and this would be a red. It's not. It's Scotland, and therefore it's an amber. It's got danger attached to it, but you're very right. And, you know, things left in gardens at this time of year, when I say left, slides, swings, barbecues, all of these things that you pull out in the summertime that you put back in the garage or wherever else in the wintertime, they're out there at this moment in time. And that's the sort of thing that will be propelled.
Yes. Secure your trampoline.
We've heard stories about that, haven't we? And that's an obvious one. So, yeah, these warnings, you know, as I say, I'm not necessarily saying, oh, this is climate change. That's the wrong thing to say. Other people after the event will look at this and say, okay, it was that bad. This was the 10% more than what we expected or perceived, and therefore there's a little bit of climate change in there, off the ocean temperature, etc. But we're going to have to wait this 24 hours now to see how that behaves. It is through the day, and by the time we come to Tuesday morning, it should be kicking off and basically gone. Just maybe a little bit of the Orkneys and the Orkneys and further north than that. That's about, yes, where it'll be. Wick and Thurso, places like that.
Right. Well, once we're through and on the other side of that, we have another month of summer to go. It seems extraordinary. It almost feels as though we've had so much summer that we should be entering autumn now. But there's another month. What's it going to be like?
Yeah. It feels like that. You're absolutely right with that, Nick. It's a bit weird, this one. I know it's going a little bit darker now in the evening times and a little bit less light in the morning time, but what it's going to be like, I'll tell you something. By the time we get to the end of the coming week, and I'm talking now probably the weekend, we may well be back into the point of seeing 30 degree plus into southern England, and that may well migrate itself further north and west as time goes on through the following week. So you're very right in suggesting that summer hasn't ended. August, look, we can get storms, we can get rain, we can get bad days, but we can also get the heat in August. We've seen it before, and we'll see it again, and I think it's on its way. So, you know, as much as it's been, let's just say, a little bit up and down of late, including the test match, which will play out tomorrow without a shadow of a doubt, you know, I think we can look forward to more of the same summery weather on its way, with very little rain, by the way, for most of England and Wales in this coming fortnight.
All right, good to talk to you, Jim, as always. Thanks very much.
Nick.
Jim Dale, founder and senior meteorological consultant at British Weather Services. Very little rain. Listeners in Glasgow will get their own weather. Now, a short break, and then back to your stories about, and I'm sorry about this, rats. Big rats, huge. 0345 6060 973. Have you had a rat problem? And if so, how'd you get rid of them?
LBC. Last week on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Another week making the news, starting with a man rarely out of the headlines.
Why are we setting up an elite police force to monitor what people say about illegal immigration? This legislation is the biggest threat to free, open debate and speech.
From safety online to safety on the streets.
What are the seven areas then, geographical areas?
Now you'll have to forgive me. It's very early in the morning, but I do know them.
Perhaps you should know this, Minister.
Out of her depth? Someone who believes his sister should be out of jail. Disgraced Ghislaine Maxwell's brother Ian told me
Virginia Giuffre was a consummate liar. I shed no tear for Virginia Giuffre.
What does next week hold?
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Weekday mornings from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in.
Kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you, A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat... lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We're talking about rats, big rats. An enormous 22-inch rat was found in a home in Redcar. A size that is potentially record-breaking in UK terms. It was discovered by a pest controller who had been called in to investigate. I don't know whether he killed it or put a saddle on it. East Dulwich. Hello, Guy.
Hello, Nick. So my story with rats is about 5 or 6 years ago, it was a beautiful autumn morning at the end of September, and I had a day off from work, and I was having a shower, and my elderly corgi, Bernie, was in the garden. Now, he started to shriek, and it wasn't a bark, and he actually sounded like a Native American Indian war cry. And he kept on with the shrieking. He kept on with the shrieking. I was in the shower. He came into the house and started to run up the stairs, run up and down the stairs, shrieking his head off. Anyway, this all came to an end. I walked out of the shower, went into the bedroom, and on the floor, I thought there was a huge autumn leaf. And I thought, how strange for there to be a huge autumn leaf by my bed. So I put on my glasses, and Bernie had, in fact, slaughtered quite a large rat and he'd left as a gift.
Yeah, as a present. How nice. It's weird when a pet makes a noise that you've never heard it make before.
Yes, but no. But what's particularly strange is that I didn't think corgis had it in them, particularly when 15, like he was at the time.
Yeah, I don't know what corgis are bred for, but I know that Jack Russells are ratters.
Yeah, no, corgis are drovers.
Right.
So corgis don't have a prey instinct.
Huh. Well, I guess you either got lucky or unlucky, depending on your point of view.
No, I think I got lucky. And,
right.
And he enjoyed himself. He felt like a young man again. He felt like a young dog again.
Well, that's a twofer. Yeah. Thanks for that, Guy. 0345 6060 973. Kirk in Croydon says, the highest growth sectors in cities are hospitality-related. Food businesses in close proximity, and too many of them. It's common sense. The government make a load of money here, and they don't deal with the consequences. But they make a load of money in what sense? Again, I'm asking a screen that is not responding, because he's not on the phone. But you mean by taxation, perhaps, and they don't deal with the consequences of the extra rubbish that is caused by those food businesses. Well, that's kind of down to the council, isn't it? I mean, I know councils are hampered by the amount of money that they get from central government, and that is part of the reason why they've had to make bin collection less frequent, is because of, you know, 14 years of Tory austerity. It's all connected. But whether they don't deal with the consequences, I don't know. Can central government be blamed for our rat problem? Here's a call in New Zealand. Paul.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
So we get rats here all the time, but
we tried desperately to get rid of them, and we found we got more possums than we did rats. So the rats seem to keep the possums away. So they're kind of welcome here.
What's a possum?
A possum's a big furry mammal. They love them in Australia. Tourists go and look at them. But they came to New Zealand, and they just were totally out of control. They're everywhere. They kill all the native birds and all this kind of thing. And the rats seem to keep them away from our house.
Right. So you're on the side of the rats?
Yeah. They live in our walls. We can hear them scuffling about.
Oh, no.
But they're much quieter. They're quieter than the possums. The possums are bigger and make more noise.
Right. Are possums concerned about the presence of dogs?
They probably are, yeah. But they're tree livers. They climb trees. So I think they're a bit too big for cats. So I think they're fairly immune.
Right. Well, it's one of the things that... sorry to interrupt, but it's one of the things that that New Zealand has that is actually a pest, because I thought all of the pests in your area of the planet were in Australia, but you got rats and possums too.
Oh, yeah, there's a horrible problem with mammals in New Zealand. So mammals aren't native to New Zealand at all, to the best of my knowledge. And all the birds in New Zealand don't fly because there's no land mammals to predate on their young and their eggs. So all the mammals that have been brought here over the years are now devastating all the indigenous bird species. Huh. So it's a real, real problem for them here.
Oh, interesting. Well, thanks for passing that on, Paul. Cheers, mate. 034. He's living with it, though, scrabbling around in their walls. Bath. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Nick. You okay?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't live in London, so I can't possibly comment on the rat issue. I mean, I live in the countryside, so we do, in a sense, live with them. They're not exactly, they don't exactly have the same connotations as maybe the giant mutant New York ones do. But what I called in to say was, working in the veterinary field, like, we do have a real issue with rat poison. And I honestly can't for life me think why it's still being sold. Because the way that rat poison works is they don't die instantly. You know, if you put it in something yummy, they eat it, they go off, and it interferes with their ability to clot, and so then their blood to clot, and then they bleed to death, which is already, like, a welfare concern, because we don't really know whether that's a welfare-friendly way to die. But the problem is that when a rat dies, and then a predator, a carrion crow, what have you, comes along to eat it,
right,
they suffer the same effect.
Yes.
And so it had a really alarming effect on wildlife, but also our family pets, cats and dogs. They come in an awful lot with issues of eating rat poison.
I've also heard tales of rats becoming immune to poisons because of their... I don't know what it goes on inside a rat, but they eat a little bit of the poison to the point that they become immune to it, and then even stronger poison needs to get put down, with even worse consequences of the type that you just described.
Well, the issue is that when they eat the rat poison, it doesn't work permanently. It has a half-life like any of the medications that you and I take. And in order for them to die, they need to have some sort of injury that causes a bleed.
Right.
If they're lucky enough not to be injured, there is in theory that they could be lucky, but I think it's probably quite likely that it works. But I would also argue that while the incentive for the consumer is usually the cheapest option is to buy some rat poison, the problem is that if you've got rats in your house and they eat the food, they tend to die in quite inopportune places.
Yes.
And so then you have a dead rat.
Then you've got another problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have a solution for you, unfortunately, but it's just something that I'd like your listeners to know, really.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that, Laura. My problem was... I talked about this with Carol McGiffin. I do a podcast with Carol McGiffin. It's a problem-solving podcast. It's a bit of a laugh. I think you'll love it. It's called What's Your Problem with Nick and Carol? And a couple of episodes ago... I was telling her about the problem that I had, and I was selling my house, and I just put it on the market, and I could smell this kind of nasty smell in the basement, and I saw no actual rats, but just the evidence that there were rats there, like little droppings everywhere. And Fortunately for me, there was somebody who was advertising his ability as a rat catcher just over the road. So I asked him to come over and have a look, and he brought a couple of his dogs with him. I just thought that he didn't want to leave them alone while he left the house. And he set his... There were two Jack Russells. And he set them off, took the lead off, and they went into the basement, which is where the smell was coming from, and they went off like they were rocket-propelled. I've never seen dogs move so fast in my life. And they covered the entirety of the basement, diving into big piles of styrofoam chips that had been left by the previous owner that I hadn't bothered to take out, which is where the rats were nesting. And they'd come in through an upstanding pipe, which went down into the sewer. And it was like watching a cartoon. It was like watching a Warner Brothers cartoon, something like that, like Speedy Gonzales or The Roadrunner. They charged through and just disappeared into these piles of styrofoam and came back and just dropped a now dead rat, baby rat as it was, in front of its owner, and then charged off again and then came back a couple of seconds later with another one. And within a couple of minutes, there was a pile of them, a pile of small dead rats. And the entire problem was solved within about 15 minutes. It was like a magic trick. I've never been so impressed with any tradesperson in my life. So, and that's not what that chap that I was talking to earlier, our pest controller, he didn't mention that. Maybe that's not something that he does or approves of, perhaps. But if you've got a rat problem, get a Jack Russell. That's my advice. Thanks for all that. Sorry I couldn't get to all of your calls on that, but there probably will be opportunities to talk about rats coming up on LBC, no doubt. After the news, are you still happy swimming in the sea in this country? Or has the sewage scandal put you off? We'll look at what's being done to clean up the coast and whether it is enough to restore public confidence. Your calls on the state of our beaches and our rivers and the companies that have caused them to be in such a state, our water companies. 0345 6060 973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. The government has announced it will spend an extra £100 million on its push to reduce small boat crossings in the English Channel. It says the money will be used to provide new technology and up to 300 more National Crime Agency officers. The funds will also go towards supporting a pilot of a new one-in, one-out returns agreement with France. LBC's Laura Makin-Isherwood says the government wants to change the asylum system as well.
Currently, people can be waiting more than a year to find out exactly what their fate may be. Will they be granted asylum in the UK or be returned to the countries that they have travelled from? The Home Secretary, though, Yvette Cooper, says that she wants to speed that process up, fast-tracking some of them so that those decisions can be made within weeks. Exactly how it's going to happen isn't all that clear.
11 people have now been charged by police following a series of demonstrations outside a hotel in Essex, which is housing asylum seekers. The figure's risen after two more people were told they'll be going before magistrates later on today. Different groups of protesters have been gathering outside the Bell Hotel in Epping. Hamas has announced it's prepared to work with the Red Cross to deliver aid to hostages it's holding in Gaza. But it says that would depend on Israel allowing humanitarian corridors to be opened on a permanent basis. It also wants airstrikes to end while supplies are being distributed. Amber weather warnings for most of Scotland will come into force later on as the country's told to prepare for the arrival of Storm Floris. It's thought the weather system could create winds of around 85 miles per hour. A yellow alert for wind will also cover Northern Ireland and stretch as far as Manchester and North Wales. The forecaster Jim Dale has been telling Nick Abbott on LBC, people need to be beware.
If you're listening in Scotland and you're thinking about doing things today, you've got to really think about what you're doing, as in don't walk in forests or woods, don't go into the coastal area and hang off watching the waves come in thinking you're going to be safe necessarily, and even watch your back as you're walking down the street if you're going to venture out at all, because things will be flying around.
And a world first for sexual health will start in England later on today. A free vaccine for gonorrhea is being made available. The NHS hopes it could save around £8 million over the next decade. LBC weather, mostly dry overnight with increasing cloud cover and windy conditions developing in the north and the west as the night goes on. We'll see a low of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Almost half of Britons say that they would never swim in the sea, and that number having risen sharply amid the ongoing sewage scandal. Nearly one in two of us say we will not swim in the sea during the summer, that number having risen sharply by 6 percentage points in just the last couple of years. Let's talk about this with Helen Maguire. Helen is a MP for Epsom and Ewell for the Liberal Democrats, the party that conducted this poll. Good evening, Helen.
Good evening, Nick.
Well, there were over 500,000 confirmed sewage discharges last year. Those are the ones that we know about. Would you go in the sea in this country?
Well, I think it's really problematic at the moment, and it's absolutely shocking that, you know, really hardly surprising that people up and down the country are just rightly furious about this national sewage scandal. You know, people want to, in the British summer, go and have a staycation and enjoy the sea, and it's just really concerning. And at the moment, they're having to check, you know, websites to make sure that there isn't pollution, there isn't sewage spills, and, you know, it would be nice to just be able to go to the sea and enjoy it if you want to.
And are we seeing the consequences of this on tourism in this country?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I haven't got statistics on that in front of me, but I'm sure it, you know, possibly does harm tourism. But that's something we need to get feedback from, you know, the locations where individuals go to enjoy the seaside. But I certainly think that when people go to, you know, British seaside resorts, many of them, families with young kids, they want to go and have a paddle in the sea.
Happily, I do have the numbers, or at least the numbers from 2023, and visitors to Devon and Cornwall were down 20% that year. And that's a couple of years ago, and of course the news about this ongoing scandal has been much amplified in that intervening period. So I would imagine that, you know, our coastal resorts are suffering mightily because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a time when we really should be supporting, you know, British businesses. You know, it's a time when many businesses are suffering due to the national insurance increases. You know, so we should be out there in the beautiful weather that we've had this summertime and supporting our British seaside resorts.
And it goes beyond just people deciding where to go this year, doesn't it? Because as tourists shun resorts in the UK, they're going to take trips elsewhere. So do you think that the reputational damage to the country, this association with sewage, is going to be hard to shake off?
Yes, I think it's a massive reputational damage, and it's really on this government now to sort this out. I mean, they've talked about halving sewage spills by 2030, but we're saying we need to not just halve them, but just get rid of sewage spills entirely so that people can have the confidence to go to the seaside and enjoy the sea if they so wish so.
Do you think that halving sewage spills by 2030 is actually achievable?
Well, we think it is achievable and we should go further. That's why we're saying that we actually just need to completely get rid of sewage spills. But what this relies on at the moment is, you know, we're delighted that this government has decided to scrap Ofwat and put a new regulator in place, but we really need to start holding these water companies to account.
Does the diluting of the sewage in a vast expanse of water actually mitigate the dangers of swimming offshore?
Well, I think it's all about exactly where the outlets are. I mean, some of the outlets are very close to the shore, so this is one of the problems. You know, I'm sure if it's much further out, it might help. But look, there's pollutants in the rivers. The rivers go into the seas, and so it depends where the beaches are in relation to the outlets and obviously the rivers that goes into the seas.
And is there any evidence of people becoming ill from swimming off our shores?
There will be. I haven't got the evidence in front of me, but I mean, all the time, this is why, you know, Surf Against Sewage have, you know, produced the website so that people can actually safely swim in our rivers and seas across the country.
Am I right in thinking that the EU has strengthened its sewage regulations, in the meantime, we've, to my eyes, simply allowed water companies to do what they like?
Yes, absolutely. And this is why it's really important that we, you know, continue to hold the water companies to account. And in my patch in Epsom Muir, we've got Thames Water, which has been, quite frankly, a complete disaster. And that's why we're calling for it to go under special administration so that we can actually start serving the customers better and stop polluting into our rivers.
Yes, because this problem is not just associated with our seashores, is it? It's rivers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real problem. I mean, we've got some lovely places near us. We have something, you know, the stepping stones near Box Hill. And, I mean, you literally go down there and the other day I was down there and saw even baby wipes, you know, swimming along in the river. So it's, you know, paddling in our rivers, swimming in the sea. People just want to be able to enjoy the river and go down there with, you know, with the kids or whatever and have a nice time.
Do you think that there's some things that people can enjoy at the beach that don't require complete immersion? I'm thinking of, when I was in Brighton the other day, I saw a lot of people paddleboarding and canoeing and stuff, less swimming and more, not less in the water and more on the water.
Oh, yes, and absolutely. Canoeing and paddleboarding have become, you know, an improving sport. But even to get on a paddleboard and to get on a canoe, you actually have to get in the water at some point to be able to get yourself off the shore. You know, they're great sports, and it's good to see an increase in uptake in those sports. But, you know, equally, you can sort of go there and, you know, have a look at the sea and see what animals and creatures you may find and put your wellies on, which might protect you. But it would be nice to go to the sea and know that it's clean, wouldn't it?
Is it just sewage, or do we have an issue with chemicals and plastics?
There's definitely chemicals and plastics, and certainly there are people all over the country who go down and help sort of clean up their beaches all the time and remove waste that obviously comes in through the waves. And it's really important that we try and keep everything, you know, as clean as possible. But obviously it's not always with the waste. It's not necessarily the water companies that are responsible. I mean, that's coming from the seas and wherever it's sort of, however it's ended up in the sea.
This has been very, very newsworthy for quite a while now. The Liberal Democrats have been doing good work on this issue. Fergal Sharkey, of course, has been putting himself about. I wonder if this is a problem that always existed. It's just that we are more aware of it now.
Obviously in the rivers, there was only a period of time when the rivers were being monitored, and I'm sure there's always been some sort of sewage, but I think as more people have probably got ill and more people are, you know, enjoying the seas and the rivers, people have started to take more notice of it. So that I'm sure there's always been some amount of sewage, but what we, you know, do know is that it hasn't necessarily been getting better. It's been getting worse. And, you know, what we really want to make sure is that when people go down to the rivers and seas, they can fully enjoy them and not have to worry about getting ill or any kind of floating rubbish passing by.
And on the subject of the water companies, I mean, they say they won't survive, or they say that at least they won't be able to attract investment if they are fined heavily for their spilling. Well, what do you say to that?
Well, look, I mean, as I said, we've got Thames Water in Epsom and Ewell, and we've been calling for it to be a public benefit company for a long period of time now. It really needs to go under special administration, and what we really need is to have a board where we've got people represented on the board who actually represent their community and are putting the interests of the river first and not the interests of the directors and shareholders.
So it would still be run as a for-profit company?
For-profit, but all the profits would go into the infrastructure, to improving the infrastructure.
Right, so I mean, there's all sorts of things that people have suggested could happen to the water industry, and with each suggestion, there's been an equal or larger number of people who are saying, well, you can't do that for the following reasons. And there's different figures that have been put out on renationalising the entire lot, from zero to £100 billion. Do the Lib Dems have an opinion on that?
Well, we don't think that nationalisation is the right approach. We think that that would be letting these water companies off the hook. They got themselves into this situation in the first place, and we do need to protect the public purse. This is why we're putting forward the public benefit company.
But in what way would it let them off the hook? I mean, if we're taking their business away, their way of rewarding themselves for their ineffectual behaviour, then I don't understand how that would be letting them off the hook.
Well, because if it was nationalised, then it would be the government that would be taking on the debts. And it's different with the public benefit company. You know, we need to make sure that the water companies are working in the interests of the customers.
So you buy the we couldn't take the company over without taking on its debt, rather than you wipe the debt and you buy the company for a pound.
As I said, we think that the best way to move forward is to put them into a public benefit company so that they can actually work on behalf of the customers fully. And we think at the moment that would be the best outcome.
And that's not just for Thames, that's for all of them?
For all the companies, but obviously in my particular area, it's Thames Water. This is we have a massive problem with at the moment.
And the government has said that they're going to institute a new regulator. Do you have any confidence that they'll do a better job than Ofwat?
Well, we'd like to think they can, but what's really important is that they need to be allowed to levy more serious and higher fines for persistent sewage dumpers, and that they can also be held criminally responsible for this as well, which would be an extension on the existing powers that they have.
By which you mean, and by criminally responsible, that would go beyond fines, and that's, we're talking about prison.
Well, if it got to that point, but we hope it wouldn't, but we hope that the threat of that would mean that they'd actually take it more seriously than they do at the moment.
And if they were being run as a public interest company and they were fined, wouldn't that be fining the public?
I mean, well, the public benefit company means that the profits go back into the infrastructure. So it's not necessarily fining the public, but I guess what you're saying is it would take money from the people who are paying for the bills, which at the end of the day is the public. But obviously, if it's run with people on the board who have the rivers as their kind of personal interest, then we hope they would be reducing the amount of sewage leaking in the first place.
Right, so it would remove the necessity to fine them in the first place.
Exactly, because what they're not focusing on is trying to get money back to the directors and shareholders.
And in reality, do you think that what you're proposing is actually a goer? Is that a part of a possible future?
Absolutely. I mean, what we can see is, quite frankly, it's not working at the moment. So we need to do something differently. At the moment, we've got sewage being poured into our rivers, sewage being poured into our seas, and certainly here in Epsom and Ewell, we've got almost a third of everyone's bills is going to pay for the debt that Thames Water has.
Very good to talk to you, Helen. Thanks very much for your time. That's Helen Maguire, Liberal Democrat MP for Epsom and Ewell. So everybody agrees that we have a problem, but there's little agreement about what we should do about that problem. What should we do about the water companies? Because continuing as we are is not really feasible, is it? It's we're out on our own here. No other country in the world sold off all of its water. Now we find ourselves in this position. How can we get back to a place where, and it doesn't seem unreasonable, where you can go to a seaside resort and actually go in the sea? 0345... 6060973. Would you go in the sea off the coast of this country? Would you go swim in a river? You can text 84850, email nicka@lbc.co.uk. If you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060973.
This is LBC.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yeah!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Mr. Thing is enjoying a lovely summer's day. He's trimmed the hedge, he's cut the grass, and best of all, he's just had 25% snipped off his home care cover, meaning his boiler, electrics, plumbing and drains are now covered for less. Chop chop, sign up today. This offer ends soon. Search British Gas Home Care Cover. Watch out for that rake, Mr. Thing. Ouch! Too late. British Gas. Taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Offer not available to existing home care or boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September 2025.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We're talking about the state of our water, and almost half of Britons who responded to a poll conducted by the Liberal Democrats, half of us, pretty much, say we would never swim in the sea, which means that more than half of us think that they would. That surprises me. Nearly one in two people say they would never swim in the sea during the summer. That number has risen by, the press release says has risen sharply by 6 percentage points in just 2 years. I'm a bit surprised it's that little, actually, because over the past 2 years we've had such a lot of publicity, much of it done excellent work by Fergal Sharkey. Others have followed his lead and, publicised their own horror stories. There's Surfers Against Sewage. Many other bodies have brought this to our attention. So it doesn't seem like a big percentage point increase, just 6% on 2 years ago. 6% more say that they would never swim in the sea. I'm amazed every time I see anybody in the ocean or the channel. I mean, Brighton is the nearest seaside to me. I go there quite a lot. And I never cease to be amazed to see people in the water. I just think, do you not get the news? Maybe I'm just being too sensitive. Maybe it was always like this, and now we know about it. It's considered a problem, whereas before, I mean, were our seas perfectly pure and clean in the 1970s? Go down to the coast in the 1970s and on a warm summer's day, and the sea will be absolutely chock-a-block. Tower Hamlets. Hello, Elliot.
Hi, Nick.
Elliot.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
So the point that I wanted to raise was how there are many subcontractors involved with these water companies that ultimately removes liability from these water companies and reduces the quality of the end product to the customer. I've actually recently joined one of these subbies as an employee for one of these water companies, and essentially the way the hierarchy has, or from what I could see, was you have the water company who then employs a subcontractor. That subcontractor employs multiple subcontractors who then employ self-employed people who are then representing the original water company. Mm. So you can see how those multiple layers.
So nobody claims responsibility. Oh, it's got nothing to do with me. It's the subcontractor.
Absolutely, yeah. Both from a quality standpoint and even from, you know, a funding perspective, you have some self-employed guys going in. Oh, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a leak or, you know, there's no
In much the same way as the management of some inefficient company will hire a consultant and then blame the consultant for the poor performance of their company. Yeah. What do these subcontractors do?
So they have these large contracts that sort of hire these operatives that are then responsible for going into these properties and trying to install water meters.
Right.
I don't know if you know, but you know, there's a huge push for everybody to have a water meter installed. Mm. That's essentially what these subcontractors are hired for. Getting people to install water meters, really.
Right. with which they can tell whether you're using your hose during a time of a ban.
Well, yeah, I guess they claim that it's for two reasons. It's one, to detect leaks, and secondly, to pay for what you're actually using.
Well, I guess that's fair enough. I mean, if that is actually what they're using it for, then that seems reasonable, unless you know otherwise.
I agree. But at the same time, I believe that, you know, sometimes you have a leak, you have a water meter, sometimes you're not aware of the leak, and you end up ultimately paying for the leak that's near your property because you have a water meter.
Yes. Well, it seems a bit rich to charge a customer for a leak that is not necessarily their problem, their fault, when the water companies themselves are losing billions of litres of water every day. I've got that right, haven't I? It's billions every day. It's hundreds of Olympic swimming pools worth of water every day.
Yeah.
All right, good to talk to you, Elliot. Thanks for that. Welling Garden City. Hello, Stan.
Yeah, hi there. I should write the Dummy's Guide to Pollution of Our Rivers, because I'm a crusty. I'm nearly 80. I've been a plumber, and I've worked on the extension of a large sewage work, so I know it from start to finish.
Okay.
Here is the problem, and here is the solution. The problem is that all of the cities in the British Isles were built either pre or during Victorian times. So our sewage system is built on along Victorian standards. At that time, all the black water, i.e. water from the toilets, and the grey water, water from bath sinks and things, plus all rainwater, all go into the same sewage system, go to the treatment plant to get treated. When it rains, the treatment plant is overwhelmed, can't deal with that volume, and so the overflows bring mixed water over the top and into the rivers just to get rid of it. The solution is we need to only send water that needs treating to the treatment plant. Now, that would mean that on the typical house, older properties only, modern houses don't have this problem. On all older properties, you would need to separate the gutters from the roof and the garage and the driveway, all the clean rainwater. That goes into a soakaway, goes down into the ground, tops up the aquifers for drinking water.
Right.
All of the dirty water goes into the sewers and goes off to be treated, and that's the end of that. But here's the thing. How do we separate it?
Mm.
And this is the bit where I've become the most hated person in the country. It doesn't matter how many academics you throw at this, how much money, how many people you put in prison from the water companies, not going to cure it. What you need to do is every householder is perhaps given some sort of financial assistance or not, depending on the flavour of the government at the time. But every householder who has a property, which has increased in magnificent amounts of money over the years, is now responsible for a simple task. They dig a hole in the garden, a metre by a metre by a metre. They put big stones at the bottom, then smaller stones, then very small stones, and then put the lawn back on the top. And all the clean rainwater goes into that, soaks away in the ground, makes all the flowers grow, and tops up the aquifer hundreds of metres below ground. And meanwhile, the treatment station doesn't have to work overtime to try and deal with all the dirty water. And every house should pay for their own soakaway.
And that soakaway would take the water out of the gutters that go around the house and the garage, if
you've
got one.
And off the driveway and the garage, because at the moment, that clean rainwater goes off to the treatment plant. It doesn't need treating.
Huh. Right.
What can we do in between times?
Yes, go on then.
I'll tell you what we do. I don't think they've been invented yet, but anyone who's listening and's in that industry, design some bloody great big giant bags, expandable rubber bags, and all the treatment water that they can't process today or next week goes in these giant bags, and then when they've got down and the rain has stopped, they can then carry on treating that 24 hours a day till the bags are empty, ready for the next rainfall.
Well, let's go back to that whole thing in your garden, because if that would work. And it does make sense to separate the water that comes out of your toilet for the water that just drips off your roof.
Well, all modern houses have that already. Oh. It's part of the planning process.
Right.
If you want to build one house or 10 houses, you have to dig a hole the appropriate size, put aggregates in it, and then top it off.
So they do, right. So they do this already?
They do it already.
How do they get the water from the gutter into the hole?
It's called plastic pipe. It's very popular where I live.
But you haven't got plastic pipe running over your garden, though.
No, but it, when the house is built, it goes under
right,
the garden
okay.
into the soakaway. Huh. Now, the other thing is, things do get better as we go forward and human beings start to learn. Nowadays, that rainwater, instead of going into a pit to soak away, it goes into a pit which has a pump that you can draw the clean rainwater out from under the ground, use it to wash your car, top up the toilets, water the garden, all things except for drinking it.
Well, Stan, I think you need to unretire.
Well, I'm already a local councillor in Hertfordshire, and I'm doing my best to try and change the world, but bloody hell, it's a big job.
Well, it is, but if you can change the world significantly, or this let's start with this country, shall we? We'll leave the world till later. But if you can change this country significantly by just digging a meter cubed hole in your back garden, because that doesn't sound like a very expensive process, is it?
Well, it's not. No, it's not. It's not a big process.
Well, how come we're not doing this then? I mean, it seems relatively simple and inexpensive.
Because plumbers aren't in charge yet. We're working towards it.
Right.
Come the revolution. The plumbers are going to take over.
When plumbers rule the world, things will be a lot better. Well, cleaner at least.
Well, no, not if you look at the state of our hands. We know where they've been. That's why we don't shake hands. We bump knuckles.
I'll keep that in mind. Thanks a lot, Stan.
Ta-da.
Huh. Well, I wasn't expecting to get anything quite that practical, but that sounds like a good idea. But in the absence of that, what are your thoughts about... I should have asked him if he would swim in the sea. I'll assume the answer is no. Would you? Because this new poll on behalf of the Liberal Democrats suggests that half of us would say no. And what I'm interested in is what the other half are thinking when they say yes, they would. And what should we do with the water companies? There's so many differing opinions, so many people who have apparently absolute certainty that this or that is the right thing to do with the water companies, that we can take them over for nothing, just let them fail and then take them over for a nominal pound, or it would cost us £100 billion to take on their accumulated debt and many other opinions in between. And I have absolutely no idea which is the right one. Or do you think that we should perhaps just let them do their thing and bring into being a stricter overseer? Certainly one that is more keen to do their job than Ofwat appears to have done. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC. I'm Nick Abbott. It's 12:30, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The government has announced it will spend an extra £100 million on its push to reduce small boat crossings in the English Channel. It says the money will be partly used to provide new technology and up to 300 more National Crime Agency officers. As you've been hearing with Nick, it's being claimed almost half of Britons would never swim in the sea. The Liberal Democrats have been conducting a survey as concerns rise over the dumping of sewage in the UK's rivers and seas. And a free vaccine for gonorrhea is being made available in England from today. The NHS hopes it could save it around £8 million over the next decade. LBC weather mostly dry overnight with increasing cloud cover and windy conditions developing in the north and the west as the night progresses. We'll see a low of around 13 degrees.
LBC.
Thinking you've made a mistake with your uni choice? Maybe you've changed your mind about those bigger lecture halls and that theory-heavy course. It's not too late to choose a practically focused law degree that gets you career-ready. Switching through clearing isn't settling for second best. It's giving you more opportunities to find your perfect match. At the University of Law, you'll benefit from more academic coaching, more hands-on learning, and more tailored support to achieve your ambitions. Our dedicated clearing team are ready to match you to the right law course today. Apply to the University of Law through clearing. Your successful career in law starts here.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, we are talking about this poll that's been conducted by the Liberal Democrats that has found that about half of us say we would never swim in the sea off the coast of this country. The poll also found that less than a fifth of people say they would actually be more likely to swim in the sea if the government meets its target of cutting spills in half. I don't know. That doesn't actually sound that appealing, does it? Come in the sea, there's only half as much sewage in it as there used to be. That's still a no from me. How about you? New Cross. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Nick. Great show. I just cannot believe people can still swim in poo. See, I just find it astonishing. And they came out, I feel lovely. How can you swim in the water in this country? It's from here to Scotland. It's complete sewage.
It does astonish me every time I see somebody in the water. I just can't put myself in their mind. What are they thinking?
I remember when you go in the water, what do? You've got to open up your mouth.
Yeah, but it's not just on you, it's in you.
They come out and say, oh, I feel great. Mm. They go home, they're completely sick. The guy came before this now, saying dig a hole. A lot of people live in flats in London.
Well, that's true,
Dig holes in flats.
Well, please don't dig a hole in the floor of your flat, particularly if you're not on the ground floor. But I'm pretty sure that there would be some... I mean, if he says that new build houses have got to have this system, which sounds like genius to me, some of the simplest solutions are the cleverest, then I would assume that blocks of flats have got some sort of thing like that, although I don't know. Thanks, Michael. Maggie says, I would never swim in the sea in this country, and definitely not in the rivers either. I saw a swan on the Thames with a thick brown tide mark round its body. Yuck, says Maggie. Oh, that is horrible. Scarborough, Eliza.
Hi, Nick. The fellow who you just had on a couple of callers ago was talking about how when there's too much rain... goes over the weir and into the river. Yes, that is true. And the thing that he was talking about separating the water from gutters and that, that's been talked about for decades.
Is it?
When water goes over the weir because there's too much rain and we don't need to treat rainwater, there are... the settlement tanks and screens before anything goes to the river, so there's no chunks. you will get some chemicals because we're all putting washing powders and things like that. But dilution should really sort that out. One of the problems that we really have is that let's say on a road that leads to the sea. We have a big one in Scarborough, it's called Valley Road, and the drains there, they go directly to the sea. They're not owned by the water companies, they're owned by the councils. So if you let your dog do something in the gutter, that will end up in the sea, and there's nothing to stop it. But you can't blame water companies for that, because it's nothing to do with them.
No. But that that what you just described sounds like sort of small beer, compared to these vast, flowing, huge pipes that are flowing into the sea for hundreds of thousands of hours put together every year. I mean, a bit of dog poo in the water every now and again, that doesn't seem like much.
Well, this is it's a very, very complex situation. but...
Would you go into the sea in Scarborough?
I'm not all that fussed about doing that, but I do remember as a kid, pre-privatisation, you would see at various points along the beach, there was just brown liquid always heading into the sea. It's not brown anymore.
Right.
So there have been improvements. I mean, you talk about the teas, the amount of songs that were written about the teas and how disgusting it was because of all the pollution that was just dumped in there from ITI and other industries.
Yeah, I wonder if it's always been like this. Right. Well, I wonder if it's always been like this. It's just that we know more about it now and are more sensitive to it.
Yes. Well, for a start, it was only a couple of years ago when they asked the water companies to put these flow meters on so that you got a report every time water went over the weir and into the storm drains.
Mm.
So we never talked about that because we didn't know it was happening.
Yeah, we didn't know. I mean, we might have gotten the sense of it when we were in the water and it didn't smell right, or there was a brown foam on the waves. But we didn't put two and two together as we do now, because we didn't have people like Fergal Sharkey and the Lib Dems bringing this to our attention.
But the thing is, that's not really the problem. There are, sometimes there are proper spills. Yeah, mistakes are made.
Mm.
But that's not the thing that everybody's talking about. Everybody's talking about, you can go on that website and you can see, oh, there's been, you know, 173 today or whatever. But that's not really a problem because most of the stuff is filtered out of that.
The
biggest problem that I see, well, you've got a whole load of waste that comes off farmers' fields and it's pretty impossible.
That is,
how would you deal with that?
Yeah, that
that's
is
not possible.
I guess it's a separate but connected issue. They call it the drain off or other phrase. I can't remember, but it's essentially all of the chemicals that farmers put on their fields when it rains. It tends to wash off into our water courses. Yeah. All right. Good to talk to you, Eliza. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Brighton. There, Janet.
Hi there.
Would you go into the sea in Brighton?
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing that's putting me off tomorrow is this storm. I think it might be a bit too windy, unfortunately. All the year round.
And nothing that you've read or heard about put you off?
No, and I'm one of many. And it's not actually Brighton Beach itself, but that's only because of where I live. It's the next beach along.
Hove?
Towards Ovingdean.
Right.
But yeah, it's a lovely beach. We're always told that the water pollution rate is fairly low.
I wouldn't take comfort with that.
Actually good. But I you don't see brown things floating around or nasty looking. And
did you ever get sick?
All the children get... No, touch wood.
No?
Never.
And are you swimming or are you doing something that keeps you mostly out of the water? Right,
swimming.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
as I say, it's only the weather that puts me, you know, it's only the current. Water safety. I'm actually a qualified lifeguard. So I've got I've confidence in the water.
Do you actually do lifeguarding?
I don't drink it.
No, okay.
Not anymore, but
right.
I used to. I've done it a lot over the years.
Do you actually do lifeguarding?
I'm not a lot now.
Because I was just going to ask whether you've noticed fewer people lately are taking to the waters.
Yeah, I think that is probably true. But then we've talked about that a lot, and certainly all our friends, everybody I know swims, and so that's not changed. But I think, and I'm not really aware of anybody saying they've had horrible stomach bugs or anything. The only thing I would say is that we've commented there's been less people, but we thought it just down to, you know, less holidaymakers, to be honest.
Well,
fingers, we might be wrong.
Yeah, fingers crossed you continue with in good health, Janet.
Yeah,
thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Liverpool, Vincent.
Hello, Nick. You all right, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Thinking there, you know, as you said, which is a very good point, it's so emphasised about rivers and the sea now, is people actually pick up on it. And I think the most important thing, and not just lately, this is going on for years, you know, I think the people who run the water thing, not more meetings, not more things like that for governments. You need people who know what they're doing, infrastructure, the water. You need people like that, and it doesn't seem to be happening.
Would you go into the sea in off Liverpool?
Yeah.
Well, really?
As long as you don't step on a Tesco trolley. Like, no. but years ago, the Mersey was the dirtiest river, to be honest, in Europe.
Right.
But I still swam there because I knew no different, to be honest, than that. But at the end of the day, if I go down, we used to live in Worthing by Brighton, and I look at the sea, and it's brilliant. If I go down to the UK, completely different. If I look at the Mersey, Barbados, well, something very similar. Right, so it's you can see Scotland's got lovely rivers and things like that,
yeah.
But you can see it. So going swimming is your own choice, do you think, Nick?
Well, I think the north of Scotland might be your best bet to put your toe in the sea, as long as you don't mind the freezing cold. And also, maybe tomorrow, not the best day to do it, because you've got a storm coming, as we were talking about earlier. Thanks for that, Vincent. Tony says, I live in Great Yarmouth, and I haven't been in the sea here for 40 years since I was a teenager. I'm absolutely amazed that holidaymakers swim here by the hundreds. I've got to say, it does astonish me every time I go to the coast and I see people in the water. I wouldn't even think of it. But, you know, maybe that's just me. Ray in Spain says, the problem with your sewage is no sewage plants or dams have been built. The overpopulation of the UK has broken everything. Well, that's a contributing factor. I'm not sure that it's the thing. And Sam says, why cannot the question be answered truthfully? Why cannot the state take over the water companies without taking on the debt? Let the water companies collapse. Shareholders lose their money, just like what would happen to a publicly traded company. Yeah, I don't get that either. But there's any time anybody says that, there's a chorus of people saying that, oh, no, that's impossible, it can't be done. And I don't have knowledge of economics to argue otherwise. Thanks for all that. Now, we're going to take a short break, and then we're off to America to talk to our US correspondent. This is LBC.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
The Home Office is giving £100 million of extra funding to support the new one-in-one-out agreement with France on immigration. This morning, could this finally solve the small boats crisis? And if not, what will?
Richard Spur on LBC.
At Kia, we're excited to announce that the refined new Kia Sportage is available in showrooms now. Secure your test drive today to explore its advanced technology and stylish, sporty design. Order before the 30th of September to get 5.9% APR representative and £1,000 PCP finance deposit contribution. Search the new Kia Sportage to book your test drive. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name. Experts in money. A hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount. Promised a great return. Took all I had. And then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated. And every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money. So head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
Tell CEL.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. assuming you want to get noticed.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Off to America, let's talk to John Christopher Buer from Real Political News. Hello, John.
Nick, it's just wonderful hearing your voice. Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about Vladimir Putin. Do you think that he is...
Must we really?
Yes, we must.
Okay, fine.
Do you think that he, Vladimir Putin, is frightened by Donald Trump's moving his submarines about like he's playing a game of battleships?
Well, you know, the fact is that Medvedev said that Trump should picture the TV series The Walking Dead. Now that was that's crazy. They're playing nuclear chicken, and you don't want to antagonize Trump. Nobody wants to antagonize him. You never know. I mean, and Putin is just the same. And we've got three amazing individuals in this world. When you think we've got Putin, Netanyahu, and Trump, and the egos are beyond the stratosphere or whatever sphere you want to talk about. And I don't trust any of them. And this could end up having us all in welcoming Armageddon again, and the Christian right would be happy because they could be they could baptize themselves in the state of Israel, all happy.
Now, Donald Trump shouldn't really be lowering. Well, how low can he go? He shouldn't be lowering himself to having spats with Medvedev, because Medvedev's not on his level, is he? But Trump just can't help himself.
I mean, you know, oh, come on, Nick, you and I know this. We've had this conversation. And what he does is he's trying to get attention. Trump is trying to get some kind of attention to distract from the ridiculous tariff issues that he has and from the issues with the fellow who's somehow died in his cell, Jeffrey Epstein. And now Trump has moved, ready for this, you know this, Maxwell out of a heavy security prison in Florida to some kind of a prison camp in Texas.
Yeah.
Now, what does all that mean? He's trying to manipulate and maneuver everything. Now, what he's trying to say there is, my dear, I can actually get you out. I may give you a pardon. And you know, this is a sex offender, 20 years, going on 20 years in prison. And he's using all of it. And he's trying to deal with all of these problems. And he's having a difficult time. So he'll fight with anyone if he can get press on it. And Trump knows that Putin has him looking like a chump, as we call it.
Yes. Yes, he does, because Putin is standing, watching his underling have a Twitter spat with the President of the United States of America. And I mean, it's just so, it's embarrassing, apart from anything else. But it's also terrifying, because the thing that Trump always does, I mean, he's so predictable, he will do something that you find appalling, and then he will double it. He will do it twice over. He'll double down. And so,
yes,
how are you going to double down on moving nuclear submarines into attack position?
I don't know. I've played military people, and I know a lot of military people, but I'm not a four star, and I don't know how this works, or an admiral, by the way. And moving your nuclear submarines into vicarious positions, it shows that this is a very high stakes game with only one bad outcome involved. And I think cooler heads should survive, but I don't think Putin or Trump know what cooler head means.
But Putin is a smart guy. I mean, if you hear him speak and it's translated into English, I mean, he uses very complicated language, and he speaks in complete sentences. And
yes,
you know, he's obviously very intelligent. He must be laughing his presidential language coming up here. Arse off.
Right. Arse, do you say?
Yes. We put an R in arse.
Yeah, I know.
He must be absolutely guffawing at being able to just poke Donald Trump and get the response that he expected.
He can, as we say in New York language, He's needling him.
Mm.
You know, he's really tormenting him. And Trump, he doesn't know how to take it except for, with his verbose language. And he'll and sending, I mean, nuclear submarines. This is insane. This is crazy. But I mean, the fact is that Trump is in hot water. He's in hot water with the economy. The Dow took an amazing dive on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and we've got problems with all our trading partners, and the tariffs are just going crazy. And we don't know what Putin has dug himself into a hole, and he can't stop unless he's meant to move out of the way, but he's not going to do that. And I think that that you couldn't get two worse characters after each other's throats,
yeah.
Ben, because neither of them are subtle. You know, that's the thing I think of before I go to bed at night, unfortunately, is the condition of the world. And when we have leaders like these three, and you throw Kim Jong-un in there and Xi and others and Netanyahu, you wonder, you pray, and I'm not a real praying man, you wonder, please help us get through this time. I mean, give us a break. Let's just have a respite. Yeah. I know you feel that, and my British friends feel the same way. I speak to them. You're a friend, and you listen to me, and you ask for me, but you know the story as well as I do. And it's not, the outcome is never a good one when we're talking about World War III.
Mm. Yeah, just because one person feels slighted. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah. You mentioned tariffs a couple of times. None of this makes any sense, does it? It doesn't make economic sense. It doesn't make sense industrially. It doesn't make any kind of sense other than it's just what mood Donald Trump is in today. How much flattery he has received from whichever country he's glaring at that moment.
Well, you know, I was in the White House when the Prime Minister was there. And the same week as Macron and also Zelensky, and they all came with an offering to Trump, and it was your wonderful prime minister who made an offering to Trump. Well, why don't we have you over to Windsor or Westminster or Buckingham Palace,
yeah.
and meet His Majesty the King, who I think is a super guy, and that was enough to get Trump willing to lower the tariffs against the UK, which I think he did. And now it's 10%.
Yes.
But they're always, Canada's 35, India's 25, Brazil, because he doesn't like Bolsonaro, that's his boy, but he doesn't like Lula, and he's using it politically. Switzerland, 39, South
Switzerland,
Africa.
Switzerland, 39%.
Exactly.
What has Switzerland done to deserve that?
Nothing. I mean, they're lovely people. Swiss. I mean, I was watching the Julie Andrews film just yesterday, Sound of Music. In Switzerland, yeah. and the Alps, and I'm thinking of Austria, and I'm thinking of ripping up the Nazi flag that Christopher Plummer did. I mean, it was just brilliant and earth-shattering.
Maybe that's what upset Trump, ripping up the flag.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what Trump wants to do, except I've known this fellow since I'm a New Yorker. Since I'm in my teens, and the tariffs make no economic sense. However, the government is collecting a lot of money, but they could break the U.S. economy because the money they're collecting are from us,
yes.
the consumer, and us who make the products here.
Of course,
and it's he's got it. You would say, ass backwards.
Yes. Do you think that the game here is? Trying to persuade his fans that it's the other countries who are paying the tariffs, and then and sort of hoodwinking them into paying tariffs on goods that are imported themselves just because prices have gone up, and then presenting them, each individual in America, with a check with Donald Trump's face on it for a piddlingly small amount of money and saying, there you are, you see, look how great your favorite president is.
That's right, and he'll send Donald Trump checks. And he also started this other thing. I mean, we're afraid of Social Security. You know what that's like in the UK. And now he's saying, well, you know, they're messing around with Social Security, Nick. In the meantime, they're going to give a baby option. Every baby that's born is going to get a Trump check for $1,000 per baby.
And this is
they're going to have a special baby account with Trump's face on it, and all the newborn babies. I mean, this is beyond anything you could ever imagine. If we got together and we were to write a play, it would be the most absurd kind of theme in the play, and that's what Trump is doing.
I would walk out of that play halfway through thinking,
I don't care if Olivier was in it, Gielgud. The job numbers were horrible.
Oh yeah, well I want to talk about that.
Unemployment went up, and these are signs that the economy is in big trouble right here in River City.
And his response to the jobs numbers going down and his previous 2 months' job numbers being revised down to almost nothing at all is to kill the messenger.
He fired this woman who was a career public servant. I was in the federal government. I know the career public servants. They are amazing. You can't get even close to them. And all she did was report the real numbers. It's like the Fed chair. There's no politics involved. But he didn't like the numbers. So as you said, if you don't like the message, shoot the messenger. It's like being a student in school and you haven't studied for your exam and you got a really bad grade. So you go in and beat up the teacher for giving you the grade. Mm. It's your fault. You didn't study. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what the tariffs are. And you don't know what the Fed does. You don't even know what the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Yes.
It does. It's the Department of Labor. This woman just reported the facts. And he's going to put his own people in. Fine. And then one more thing, if you've got a second, because it's not so nonsensical. You know, I adore the White House. I've been going there since I'm 7 years old. I used to go with my gran and my aunt, who was in the government. And now he's trying to build a $200 million extension on the east wing of the White House for 650 people, which is the most ornate, garish, glitz thing that you could imagine. It looks like a McDonald's hanging off the White House. And this is what he's putting his money into, and he paved over. It's like Joni Mitchell. They paved over a parking lot.
They paved paradise and put up a parking lot.
And put up a Trump parking lot. Yeah. And Jackie Kennedy, God bless her, who I've met many times, the poor thing and her family must be so miserable.
Always good to talk to you, John. Thanks very much for that. John Christopher Buer, the White House correspondent for Real Political News. That's it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your calls and your messages. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player and the new LBC app, on which you can read and watch the latest from LBC. You can put your news categories in the order that you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a boatload of podcasts. If you don't have either of those, then they're both free. Get them from your app store now. I'll be back with my abnormal normal shows from Friday, Saturday and Sunday night at 10. Coming up next, it's following our next host, it's Ian Payne at 4. But right now, here's Clive Ball.
It's Richard Spur. Hello. Still to come, Lord Kenick has urged the Chancellor to impose VAT on you if you pay for non-NHS private healthcare, just as Labour has done with private school fees. I'll be asking if that's fair, and have you been forced to go private to take care of your health? But first, the Home Office is giving £100 million of extra cash to support the pilot of the new one-in-one-out returns agreement with France. The money will also, it seems, be used to pay for 300 more National Crime Agency officers and equipment to step up intelligence gathering on those gangs who smuggle people across the channel in dinghies. So this morning, do you think that this could finally be one way to crack the problem of the small boats? And if you don't, what would be? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom,
It's being claimed almost half of Britons would never swim in the sea. Research from the Liberal Democrats is being published this morning. As concerns rise over the dumping of sewage in the UK stretches of water, their figures also show 29% of people who previously used the sea now won't. The Lib Dem MP, Helen Maguire, has been telling LBC action is vital.
It's really on this government now to sort this out. I mean, they've talked about halving sewage spills by 2030, but we're saying we need to not just halve them, but just get rid of sewage spills entirely so that people can have the confidence to go to the seaside and enjoy the sea if they so wish so.
Oasis say they are shocked and saddened following the death of a man at one of their Wembley Stadium concerts. It's reported they fell from a balcony on Saturday evening. LBC's Lindsay Smith-Hume has more.
The Met Police have confirmed a man in his 40s died during yesterday's Oasis gig. Officers at Wembley Stadium say he suffered fall injuries. They want to hear from anyone who saw what happened or have phone footage of it.
The regional governor of Zaporizhia in Ukraine is saying a Russian attack has killed three people. Ivan Fedorov says they died following a daytime strike, which saw private homes being destroyed. New research is suggesting most people believe the gap between rich and poor is widening. The co-op's been questioning its 37,000 members, saying more than four-fifths believe the disparity is growing and society is more divided than a decade ago. The political scientist Dr. George Aylett has been telling LBC politicians should be acting.
We need radical redistribution of wealth in this country, not just to address the rising levels of inequality, but also to help the poorest in society. Two, it is the right thing to do, and where we have seen wealth redistribution across the world, it has not been a bad thing.
Weather warnings will come into force later on, caused by the arrival of Storm Floris. It's expected to cause severe travel disruption across Scotland, which is being subjected to an amber alert. A yellow warning for wind has also been issued for northern parts of the UK from 6 a.m. And the British Medical Association has rejected claims that fewer than a third of its resident doctors joined last week's pay strike. NHS England has said almost 93% of planned procedures did still go ahead during the five-day walkout. LBC weather, mostly dry overnight with increasing cloud cover and windy conditions developing in the north and the west as the night continues. We'll see a low of around 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Hello, good morning. The Home Office is now giving £100 million of extra funding to support the pilot of the new one-in, one-out returns agreement between the UK and France and other efforts to crack down on small boat crossings. The cash will also pay for up to 300 more National Crime Agency officers and new technology and equipment to step up intelligence gathering on smuggling gangs. There will be more overtime for immigration compliance and enforcement teams, as well as funding for interventions in transit countries across Europe, the Middle East, Africa and Asia. Labour is seeking to deter smuggling gangs in a bid to bring down small boat crossings, which have topped 25,000 for the year so far. It's a record for this point in the year, even though it is summertime. The one-in-one-out deal agreed last month means the UK will, for the first time in theory, and I stress in theory, be able to send migrants back to France in exchange for asylum seekers with links to Britain. Well, this morning, I'd like to know whether you feel this scheme will finally be the one which can begin to curb the issue of the small boat asylum seeker crossings. And if you don't, what must Keir Starmer now do to stop what is now a record number of people arriving on the southern coast of this country in small boats and finding their way into the UK? 0345 6060 973. Well, John Vine was the UK Independent Chief Inspector of Borders and Immigration between 2008 and 2014. He told LBC whether he thought the threat of jail terms for advertising channel crossings online would work.
It's looked part of a panoply of sort of measures that the government seem to be announcing almost on a weekly basis. So there's a bill going through Parliament at the moment, and they've decided to put an amendment to the bill to make this a specific offence. But actually, in their own press release this morning, they include two examples of police investigations where existing laws have been used. One case involved a gang in operating in South Wales, another instance in Preston, where, you know, somebody ended up with 17 years in prison using existing laws. So I think what they're trying to do is a little bit of overkill, I think, in terms of lawmaking, perhaps in order to show activity in dealing with something that they know people are very, very concerned about at the moment. And, of course, it's against the backdrop of one of the highest numbers of illegal crossings so far this year since records began. I think there's about 25,000 people have crossed illegally so far this year. And, of course, it's quite a totemic issue because one of the first duties of any government is to secure the country's borders.
John Vine there. I mean, the situation is now that anybody who advertises small boat crossings on social media, apparently that's largely how it happens and how people find out that they can, you know, potentially get across the channel into Britain, all advertises things like fake passports on social media, could face up to 5 years in prison under a new offence that will be created, if you like, to be introduced under the Border Security, Asylum and Immigration Bill. Yvette Cooper, the Home Secretary, said that Labour had set the foundations for a new and much stronger law enforcement approach over the last year. She said, now this additional funding will strengthen every aspect of our plan and it will turbocharge the ability of our law enforcement agencies to track the gangs and bring them down, working with our partners overseas and using state-of-the-art technology and equipment. And if you remember, in the run-up to the last election, one of Sir Keir Starmer's main sort of tenets, if you like, of his manifesto was that he was going to crack the asylum seeker small boats problem by cracking down on the smuggling gangs. Now, as far as I can see, since Labour came to power just over a year ago, there hasn't really been any movement on that. I mean, we know we heard about French police on one occasion, you know, going and slashing the sides of these rubber dinghies while they were in shallow waters off Boulogne and sinking them. I think that was just actually a one-off to get a few headlines. But I can't see what he is in fact doing to crack these gangs. And if I'm honest with you, I don't know what the answer is either. I mean, how do you? It's like anything that grows and proliferates online. It's insidious. It's intangible. You can't stop it. It's anonymous. You know, it's very, very hard to shut down people who would misappropriate the law and con people online. You know, that's one of the major issues of today. Yvette Cooper also said, alongside our new agreements with France, this will help us drive forward our plan for change commitments to protect the UK's border security and restore order to our immigration system. And the National Crime Agency apparently has just over 90 ongoing investigations into people smuggling networks.